It's showtime.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we are, off and running on this, the 8th day of May, 2023. This is The Horn. Headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the Merry Wacky Zany real-time madcap multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the great globe round. And well, whatever time it happens to be, where you are, when you're listening to the podcast. But if you're listening live right now, pop into the aforesaid Merry, Wacky, Zany, etc., and you'll be greeted by the early arrival crew. That would be Theo and Squeaky and Anatole, and capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third-stage guild navigator, has not folded space today to become Man Cave. Hi, I'm Robin. A brand new week, the second week of May, begins now. Well, I mean, actually, it began yesterday, but I mean, broadcast week. At least, it all gets so confusing. Oh, and hey, if you're listening to the podcast, please like and subscribe. Leave a comment. Share it on social media. Let people know what an amazing little conversation we have that's been going on here for almost 20 years. That's really helpful when you do. And if you're listening on TuneIn, push that little heart button. Just mash the daylights out of it. And eventually we'll get to 1,000 unique listeners there. Not big numbers for, you know, a Joe Rogan or something like that. But then again, who would want to be Joe Rogan? Yeah. So I hope you all had a wonderful weekend. Mother's Day weekend is next weekend. So try to do something nice for Annette, I hope. Yes, we still have a stress line. I managed to get the phone bill paid, so we will have the stress line will be there for anybody who wants to call in. And every program here begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And consequently, we say thank you to our 8th, 7th, and 6th day of the month PayPal subscribers. Thank you so very much indeed to Marsha and Nancy. Thank you to Sue. Thanks so much to James. Thank you, James. And thank you to our pal Don in West Tennessee. And thank you to Michael in Madison. And thank you to Charlene in Rogues Island. Thank you, Stephen. Thank you, John. Thank you, Joseph. Thanks, one and all, for being partial sponsors of this little program and helping to keep it on the air. Thanks as well. I went to the post office box. Thanks as well to our buddy Dave in Lexington. And thank you so much to Brandon and Fennell in Brooklyn. That takes the fundraising goal for this evening down to $603. Yeah, I know. Prime numbers. I don't know. Whatever. Is 603 a prime? I don't know. I don't even know why that entered my head. But we're down at 603. That means $3 remain of Thursday, all of Friday's funding, and today. And now it's the desperate, horrifying downhill run to come up with $700 for Appalachian Electric Power. I feel like I work for them. Or I pay them. I pay them for the privilege of yeah. So we could get close if we could close the fundraising hole, fill the fundraising hole. But anyway, be that as it may, if you want to help out, run over to PayPal. Or run over to headon.live, I should say. Run over to headon.live, and there's a button there. If you'd like to become a monthly subscriber, you know, just put $10 in, and they call, say, make this a recurring monthly donation or whatever. Whatever the language is, it's all right there. But your help is greatly appreciated. That having been said, well, you know what we're going to talk about, don't you?
Of course you do.
Taxes. Dear God, taxes. Even the cishet white people in Texas have to be getting nervous by now. You wake up to another mass murder, mass shooting, and can't even go a day without a Nazi deciding to run his car into a crowd of people at an immigration shelter. And the damnedest thing is, I mean, this is a nationwide problem, right? I mean, we're clear-eyed about this. These things happen all over the place. But it's almost as though in Texas, the Greg Aspots, Ken Paxtons, Dan Patricks, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, John Cornyn, every Republican in government down there wants this to happen. The fact that Texas is an abattoir far more so than other states in the union is a choice that Texas has made, or that Texas Republicans have made on behalf of everyone in Texas. It feels that way. Am I wrong? It feels like a choice. Because Texas could have meaningful gun control. They could raise the age at which you can purchase a deadly semi-automatic assault rifle. They could have red flag laws. God knows, in the case of the guy who shot up the outlet mall, there were red flags. Oh my God, that dude was more red flags than a parade in Pyongyang. But they don't want to. And they don't want to because of pasty-faced, doughy, cranky old white men who, I guess, live in a state of perpetual, petrifying, bowel-watering terror about things that they're only going to happen to them because of the laws they have in place to make these things happen to them. It's almost like the government of Texas is at war with Texans. Just like the government of Florida is at war with Floridians. Am I the only one that feels that way? Anybody else? You know what? Matt in San Francisco, you're onto something. When all else fails, hug your dog. And I have a picture here of handsome Mr. Ferdinand, and he is a handsome fellow, positively regal. He's much more handsome than that jug-eared inbred who got crowned over the weekend. Why is it every time I see King Chuck, I hear banjo music? I shouldn't say that. That was mean. I could look at Ferdinand for the rest of the evening, man. That just made things ever so much nicer. Thank you. Back in Texas, they have a member of the United States Congress. And of course, he had to unburden himself when the shooting took place in Allen because, well, representing Keith Self is a freshman member of the House. He's 70 years old. He is the congressman for Allen, Texas. He's a veteran of the Army Special Forces and Rangers. He's also a right-wing goon. He is a Christian nationalist. And another way of saying white supremacist. This morning, over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, well, representing Self, it showed up for a little sit down.
Now, you know, Congressman, that is a common refrain after these incidents, after mass shootings, but many people argue that prayers aren't cutting it. Prayers are not preventing the next mass shooting. What is your response to that criticism?
Well, those are people that don't believe in an almighty God who is absolutely in control of our lives. I'm a Christian. I believe that he is. We have people, though, with mental health that we're not taking care of. Since this nation made the decision that we were going to close the mental health institutions, many of these situations are based on that.
Time out. Jack, time out. Since we closed the mental health institutions. So, Keith Self here says that everybody who attacks a mall, a school, movie theater, park, whatever, is mentally ill. I don't think it works that way. And I don't think you can preemptively incarcerate people in mental health institutions on a theory, because, see, that would require the institutionalization of every gun owner in the United States, because they're lawful gun owners until they aren't. The shooter in Allen had a patch on his chest that bore the letters RWDS. That stands for Right Wing Death Squad. He was a stone cold Nazi. And, well, more on that in a minute. But the other thing is, I just, you know, Keith Self is 10 years older than me, so goodness gracious, maybe he remembers who devastated the behavioral health system in the United States. It was back in the 80s? Yes? Yes? Because I remember it very well. Under the guise of compassion, they shut down mental health hospitals all over the country that were run by states and the like. And there was nothing compassionate about it. People desperately in need of services were simply turned onto the streets. And yes, that was the doing of the administration of old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan, probably at one time like unto a god to Keith Self. But the line there, people who say that you can't just pray it away, are people that don't believe in an almighty God who is absolutely in control of our lives. Well, somebody put out could somebody please put out an APB on God? Because somebody needs to stop that psycho. He's on a tear. These people. Sorry, I interrupted the clip.
Believe in an almighty God who is absolutely in control of our lives. I'm a Christian. I believe that he is. We have people, though, with mental health that we're not taking care of. Since this nation made the decision that we were going to close the mental...
I'm sorry. I'm doing this again. Is that a Freudian slip? We have people with mental health? Or is that just word salad? It's the people who are mentally healthy who are pulling the triggers. There may be a deity who's in charge of everything, but she's the goddess of irony, and she just tweaked Keith Self on his little pink tomato nose.
Mental health institutions, many of these situations are based on that. And the people that say, I would like to stay away from the politics today because I want to focus on the victims.
Yeah, that's the problem. We don't focus on the victims because we don't do anything to try to keep them there from being more victims. Focusing on the victims would actually mean doing something about this godforsaken disease that has our entire nation, and really Texas, in its grips.
Today, we should be focused on the families. Prayer is powerful in the lives of those people that are devastated. I know people want to make this political, but prayers are important, and they are powerful in the families who are devastated right now.
And Keith Self would like to make prayer mandatory, I'm sure. But only the right prayers. To the right God. Right? Yeah. Jeez. And he said it all with a straight face. And people are having a fit over him. Over at the New York Times, Nicholas Kristof said on Saturday, "Seems a little much for a GOP member of Congress to blame God for a mass shooting made more likely by the failed policies of GOP members of Congress." And then there was Self himself. Oh, that's confusing. On his official house website. Our founding fathers established the fundamental right of every citizen to arm and protect themselves and their families. This is indisputable. It is crucial that we not give rise to those who wish to incrementally strip away our right to self-defense. I will remain steadfast against any effort to restrict our Second Amendment rights. Jesus. Well, here's the thing. We do this every so often. Let's do it again. Let me just call it up here. S-E-C-O-N-D Amendment. Yeah. Let's read it again, sports fans. A well-regulated militia, comma, being necessary to the security of a free state, comma, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, comma, shall not be infringed, period. One sentence. But I have a question. Where, within the body of that sentence that I just read, that we have read hundreds of times before, where does the word own appear? Anybody? Because, well, I think we're going to need a little originalism here, don't you? I mean, Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can, Fappy Thomas, the most corrupt Supreme Court justice ever to sit on that bench. And that's saying something. Is all about his originalism. You know, if the framers didn't know about it, we can't have it. It can't be a constitutional right. But it only works that way for things like women's health and women's reproductive choice. And as far as FAPI's concerned, it also works with marriage equality. Because there were clearly, absolutely no gay people in 1787, not even one. Not even, you know, not even the gay boys who had served in Washington's army. There were a couple of really, really, really gay guys. And they had a profound impact on the ability of the Continental Army to survive. But no, by 1787, all the gays had been driven out of the new United States of America. I don't know. Maybe they were sent to Canada. Maybe that's why Canada's so friendly. We're so mean. But no, seriously. The word own was in the English language in 1787. It was available to the framers. Merriam-Webster should be helpful on this. Ah, it comes from Middle English. Owen. Goes back to Old English. Egan. Which is the past participle of egan. To possess, to own, to have. The first known use of the word own was before the 12th century. So that really, and well, there was a lot of debate about who could own certain things and how much of something one had to own in order, for instance, to be able to vote in the United States of America during that little conversation they were having in 1787. White, male, and owned a certain amount of property. And the property could be in human form, of course. So why didn't they say own? The right of the people to own arms shall not be infringed. It doesn't scan as well as keep an arm bears, but this isn't the King James Bible we're talking about either. Keep and bear. Gosh, that sounds like something maybe that might be leased out to you by the local armory, and you got to take it home, and every so often you would have to come to drill with the arm that you were keeping, and you would have to bear it during exercises, training, and occasionally carry it off maybe to engage in some state-sponsored violence against, indigenous people. Militia. The word own is not there. So any self-respecting originalist would have to point out the fact that keep and bear does not mean own. And yet here we the hell are. Yeah. It was Paula Reed Saturday who first asked Keith Self the question about prayers aren't cutting it.
I was in the military for 25 years, and I'll tell you, soft targets are where criminals go.
Criminals. Couldn't even say Nazi. You know what the guy who shot up the outlet center in McAllen, Texas was? A typical Keith Self voter. That's who he was. And once again, the cycle of outrage continues. Steve in New York says, Texas killings again. I suspect I'm not alone in this sentiment with this question. Why are we talking about this again? I seriously don't ask this question because I don't want to talk about this. However, I do think we could just save time by running a program about another shooting because the exasperation, agony, feelings of desperation, etc., are all the same. The other reason I write this is because discussion and commentary are things we generally use to ponder problems and investigate their causes. We consider solutions and investigate their causes. In this instance, there is literally nothing to discuss. We know the problems. We know the solutions. Truly, there is nothing to see here. We have many other countries around the world that have seen mass killings and have done things, and they haven't had mass shootings after that. I will say this. The difference for me is that this time, not exactly sure why this time, I actually have begun to feel the fear that I'm not entirely safe going into the subway, a mall, a hockey arena, an airplane, or a ballpark anymore. I now expect to see an active shooter situation. I now expect to find out a friend or a family member or a neighbor had freedom showered upon her. Yeah. Recipients of the Natural Manure Award, courtesy of the National Ruble Association. The most well-funded domestic terror organization in the United States. But a lot of what Steve says is true. But I think we also, I also think we talk about it because we have to process. And if we weren't talking about it here, we'd be, I'd be talking about it somewhere else. You'd be talking about it somewhere else. Because we would be talking about it. But it is better that we talk about it together than be talked at by a talking head on the electric TV box. Catholic Fappy, Steve in New York, says, irony alert! He should look back at what many of the framers and an awful lot of colonists said and thought about Mary-worshipping, mackerel-snapping, harlot-worshipping, pope-loving Catholics. And putting aside for a moment their views on those who are melanin-gifted. Yeah. Yeah. Originalism. Meanwhile, Bernadette says, Texas shooting. Another day, another, well, y'all know. This Jurassic Park-aged rep from Texas fails to remember the Republicans have been in power for the last 30 years in Texas. Everything that is happening in Texas is because of their policies. The people of Texas have a clear choice in this next election. The people need to vote them out. I just feel sorry for those who will lose their lives via guns, women's health, lack of electricity or water during climate change or whatever. By the way, I'm sure the god of Jurassic representative self wanted the little five-year-old's face to be blown off. That's what gods do. Ugh! I know. It's the anger. It's the terror. Too much. It's just too much. Emilio says, stop it, Robin. Just what do you expect from that GOP representative? Some kind of pertinent and effective legislation? He's here to bring us together in prayer and quiet contemplation. Nobody really understands why these mass shootings happen. It's impossible to discern. Yeah, I know. Whatever could possibly be the cause. Tis a puzzlement. I know what it is. It's them violent video games. It's them violent video games and the mental health. It's them violent video games and the mental health and the psych meds. It's the violent video games and the mental health and the psych meds and the weather, the heat. You'll notice these things always take place where it's the warmest. Cold people... Wow, they don't do it. So, no, wait, there was Buffalo. So it's the violent video games and the mental health and the psych meds and the weather and anything else we can make. We can work on a list for the rest of the evening if you want. Oh, it's the lack of prayer in schools. Don't forget the lack of prayer in schools. Let's see. It's the gays getting married. Shit, how is it? It's the transes. How did I forget that? But you know what it isn't? It's not the guns. It's not the guns. It's almost like Republicans are trying to kill retail altogether. Because why go shopping in a store when you can stay in your house, you know, with your gun? And just order it online and hope it fits, and it's a pain in the ass if it doesn't. You got to box it up. You got to get a return authorization. But at least you're not going to get your face blown off going to the Polo Ralph Lauren outlet. And by the way, the shooter had surveilled his target extensively. He even researched peak shopping density for it. And you can Google that. Who knew? Irish Dave sends this along. Hey, Dave. Vote Vets put out this statement. We've seen a lot of people parrot a right-wing NRA talking point lately. The gist of it is, if we trust 18-year-olds in the military to handle assault rifles, why shouldn't we do it with civilians? Now, the shorter answer is, weapons of war have no place on our streets. But if they want to have a conversation on weapons in the military, let's do that, because access is highly regulated. First, when you join the military, you have to undergo a background check. Novel concept. Second, you spend weeks training at basic before you ever fire a weapon. Physical and mental drills that reinforce the deep responsibility of operating these weapons of war. Then you go off to technical school where you do even more training. Third, you have to regularly requalify on your weapons. And finally, for the most part, weapons aren't carried around on base. They're safely stored in the armory alongside the ammunition. But again, there's just no reason why anyone should be able to buy a weapon that was designed for the battlefield. It's completely irresponsible and incredibly dangerous. That is solid. True. Thanks for that, Dave. And, yeah, there's a lot of outrage. That wacky husband and wife team over on My Filthy Morning Habit weren't in a good place today.
Needed to deal with the justified long-term problem of mental health. And for these people to be sitting in a state that has seen this consistently happen right in their state, at some point they're going to have to rise up and put people in office that will deal with the issue and not try to kick the can down the road.
In terms of protecting children, there is social media footage from this shooting. We, of course, will not show it here, that shows a little girl blown apart by an AR-15. It is too graphic to behold. The state of Texas, this is just since 2017. Mass shootings, those killed. 2017, Plano, Texas, 9 dead. 2017, Sutherland Springs, Texas, 27 dead. 2018, Santa Fe, Texas, 10 dead. 2019, Odessa, Texas, 8 dead. 2019, El Paso, Texas, 23 dead. 2022, Uvalde, Texas, 22 dead. And now, just in the last week or so, Cleveland, Texas, 5 dead. Allen, Texas, 9 dead. That is the state of Texas. And those are little children, and far too many of those.
That's the death toll.
And Jonathan, again, this is happening because Greg Abbott does nothing. This is happening because the state legislature does nothing. And they claim that these slaughters have to continue, that little children have to continue to be slaughtered in the name of freedom, almost like some sick, ritualistic, ancient sacrifice of children's blood.
Oh, my goodness. I halfway expect him to say, of course there's got to be a lottery. There's always been a lottery. Lottery in June, corn heavy soon. Right? Shirley Jackson, the lottery.
For their, I almost said something word, a word I shouldn't say, for their screwed up view
F-bomb.
Of a radicalized, hyper-individualized freedom that our founders never anticipated, that the Supreme Court of the United States has never interpreted, that the Second Amendment has never said. That is the...
God, give him a minute and he's going to get around to talking about our own not appearing in the Second Amendment. Now, that'll be a couple of days from now. It takes him a while to listen to the program. A lot of people catch up on the podcast. Hey, like and subscribe, okay?
Law of the land. There are states that have banned military-style weapons. The Supreme Court has been asked to overturn them and has said time and time again, nope, that's okay, that's legal. What they did in Connecticut's legal. What they did in California is legal. That is legal. And yet, states like Texas allow the slaughters to continue. Greg Abbott, keeps trying to change the subject when, again, I'm going to just keep saying it. 90% of Americans want universal background checks. 80% of Americans want red flag laws. The majority of Americans want AR-15s banned. These people are radically, radically out of step with the rest of America. And yet, as you say, they let the slaughters in Allen, Texas, Uvalde, Texas, El Paso, Texas, Sutherland Springs, Texas, Santa Fe, Midland, Texas, and Dallas, Texas continue.
Because they want it to continue. Maybe that's what we need to, maybe that needs to be the message. Maybe that needs to be said somewhere besides a tiny little internet-based global radio broadcast. Maybe they need to be confronted. Maybe they need to be looked in the eye, these Republicans, these godforsaken maggots, and say, these things happen because you want them to happen. Because if you did not want them to happen, you would do something to stop them from happening. The shooter had big black tattoos on his body, a sort of a faded out Texas tattoo on his upper bicep. Immediately below that, he had the Schutzstaffel, you know, the SS lightning bolt. And then over his heart, he had a very large swastika. A Hakenkreuz. Wonder what his political leanings were. Eric Toller is with Bellingcat, and he went digging around and he found this guy's social media profile. Mauricio Garcia. Yes, Hispanic people can be white supremacists. See the conquista of Mexico, the invasion. And it took some work for Eric Toller to find his profile, but he found it on, lo and behold, a Russian social media site called Odnoklassniki. And he posted Nazi symbolism, right-wing slogans. He did screen caps showing that he was monitoring peak times of traffic at the mall. He posted a photo of the tactical vest he was wearing during the shooting. The RWDS right-wing death squad patch was there. On April 22nd, which of course is, well, close to Hitler's birthday. He pissed and moaned about diversity. You know, the diversity that people like, you know, Florida Governor Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis bark and grunt about. The last thing he posted was, go tell Aunt Rhody that everybody is dead. Then he cited a lyric from a an author named Kenotia, K-E-N-O-T-I-A. You've dug your grave, now lie in it. It was the name. I can't unbreak something that's broken now. This is over for me. This is just the way this has to be. I'm so sorry. The profile was filled with just a tsunami of hatred for people of color, for women. he apparently reached a place in his mind where he equated mass shootings with scores in video games, gamified, referred to the Covenant Christian School shooting in Nashville as a decent kill score. He had a patch of the Texas flag with the Punisher skull on it. And apparently, sorry to constantly be beating on this, but here we go. 33-year-old Mauricio Garcia was an incel. This is from the 6th day of March past. A review of psychological evidence concludes that men are shaped by evolution to be aggressive toward outsiders. From the mighty clash of two stags rutting, oh dear, here we go, to the dawn raid of a chimpanzee, much violence in nature is perpetrated by males fighting each other in competition for female mates. A new study claims it's a similar story with humans. Cultural differences, he doesn't cite the study, of course. Cultural differences, limited resources, and technological developments all play a role, but a team of psychologists based in China and Hong Kong believe the ultimate cause of human war rests with the male libido. Historically, they argue that the lure of an attractive female primed the male brain for conflict with other males, an effect that persists in modern man, even though its usefulness is largely outdated. The reason men chase resources is because of what resources attract women. If men cannot be creators of society, they will be destroyers of society. Now it's up to society which role they want us to follow. In these modern times, the social contract is no longer functioning. Expecting men not to regress and go back to the days of rape and violence when the contract is no longer being enforced and or adhered to is what is truly outrageous and not the acts themselves. Men aren't entitled to sex? True, I agree, but women aren't entitled to safety either. The violent responses of men today are retaliatory. There's no real motivation to bother trying, to be a hard worker, to be civilized when your reward at the end of the day is to get married to used goods, who is likely only settling for you because she's aged past her prime and has a ton of baggage. This is, by the way, classic incel language. Past her prime, used goods, baggage. As cold as a glacier in Russia in the dead of winter. Conclusion, everyone who tells us variations of sex is not a big deal needs to die, be forced into lifelong celibacy. No exceptions. Disenfranchised males equal self-destructive males. I don't care about getting a girlfriend anymore. Still want sex, just not a girlfriend, because I don't believe any more women are capable of genuinely loving a man. What is overtly normal and what is covertly normal are two very different things. For example, in public, normies will say that banging a family member is nasty, but in private, porn website data shows that people are extremely interested in faux-cest-themed content. If God did not exist, it would be necessary to invent him. Be fruitful and multiply. They have been overprotective growth stunters, control freak tyrants, prudes who blue-balled me at every turn, narcissistic abusers, and because they know it will get a rise out of me, they even annoy me just for the fun of it. And then, I'll get to it in a second, Randy Radar. AR-15s were in the Old Testament. No, but they're in the new. Take up thy semi-automatic assault rifle and follow me. Right there, Jesus says it. Bernadette says, weapons of war, but buying weapons made for war makes money. I'm all for the repealing of the Protection of Lawful Commerce in Arms Act of 2005. No manufacturer of a deadly product should be protected by law in this country when their product is designed to kill, period. Yeah, I remember when that was passed. I remember the people who voted for it. Hey, Theo. Theo says, subject line, it's not the guns, it's the fill in the blank. It's the women who won't give men the sex they're entitled to. That's what it is. Hey, Theo says, this whole nasty topic gets to me especially because a mall where I frequently do business was the scene of an active shooter homicide a few years ago, and the daughter of two longtime friends worked there. She had to hide for several hours until the place could be secured, and I don't think she could let her folks know she was safe, and she was lucky. Aside concerning the video games, my darling Leah is a gamer and often plays Witcher with all its intricate swordplay. Listening to all this hysteria makes me want to lock up my Wiccan altar sword. You can't tell what notions those gamers will take into their heads. No, that's sheer balderdash. If I really pissed her off, well, I gotta sleep sometime, and it's next to her. Brr. I remember a story from a long time ago about a woman who was having problems with her spouse. And one night she woke him up out of a dead sleep. She was holding something. It was a jar. And she just looked at him and said, this is lie. And you have to sleep. Straighten up. I don't know if it worked. Theo, I'm sorry. I know, Flavio. Hispanic is a culture. It's not a phenotype. It's culture and ethnicity. There are people with blonde hair, blue eyes, and fair skin who are Hispanic. There are people with red hair, fair skin, and freckles who are Hispanic. There are people who have brown skin and black hair and are Hispanic. There are people who have black skin and black hair who are Hispanic. Hispanic, at least to Spanish-speaking people, is not a phenotype. It's an ethnicity, a culture, customs, belief, etc. It's like saying British. British people are just as varied. Yes, I get that. But I have seen it argued that it was impossible that Mauricio Garcia could have been a white supremacist. And that is simply, what's the word Theo used a minute ago? Balderdash. Steve in New York says, let me get this over on the right platform. Mental health didn't fire that gun. A man named Steven Spainhauer was at the Alt Outlet Mall looking for his son who worked at the H&M store there. And he told a TV station what he saw. And this is horrifying. Ad first, of course. Damn, this is a long ad.
Steven Spainhauer says he saw people running down the 75 service road as he raced to the Allen Outlet Mall Saturday. He was going to check on his son, sheltered inside the H&M where he works.
I didn't go expecting to become the first responder. But there was nothing I could do.
Spainhour beat medics and police to the scene. He says he tried to perform CPR on victims lying shot on the sidewalk. He doesn't know if any victims he helped survived, but he's sure at least three died before ambulances arrived.
This was carnage like you see in a war zone.
Spainhour says he hopes to forget what he saw, but he knows he probably won't. He'll seek counseling today. His son will too.
Seeing my son come out with his hands up was a relief, but having him walk past bodies that I had to cover with sheets was not something any parent should have to face.
Spainhour, who briefly served as a police officer, says he was heartbroken yesterday, furious today.
So I understand mental health. Matt, mental health didn't fire that gun.
It's time for lawmakers to act, he says, because he shouldn't have had to. In McKinney, I'm Matt Houston.
Yeah. Turned one child over. And the child's face was just gone. Blown away. And when he got to the scene of the shooting, people were standing around with their cell phones taking video. That pissed him off, and he said, if you're not going to help, stop filming. Just leave. The WFAA text says, Spainhour said he went to a victim who was crouched in the bushes and covering her head. He felt for a pulse and didn't feel one. When Spainhour turned her head, she had no face. She was gone. Tried to do chest compression on another victim of the Second Amendment. Person was coughing and moaning, and then died. He pulled a four-year-old out from under his mama. The little boy said, my mama's hurt. Help her. Now, back to the killer. And once again, a reminder of how easily how easily white supremacy, fascism, neo-Nazis, all are able to recruit from among the incels. Here's another one of his posts. Flagrante delicto. The young man was not unintelligent. So there goes the... And please, why does everybody say I understand mental health? It's mental illness. But it's not mental illness. People with behavioral health issues commit crimes on about the same, to about the same extent that people who don't have behavioral health issues do. Maybe actually less. But this essay, he flagged or tagged or what flared as inspired by libs of TikTok. Twitter account that engages in the most vile and rank forms of homophobia and transphobia and various other hatreds. This post was inspired by libs of TikTok. I guess you could say that maybe the shooting was inspired by libs of TikTok. What's her name? Chaya Rachik? I had this teacher who was supposed to be a chemistry teacher, but she used the class to promote Jewish MUH diversity hippie bullshit. I was just starting to go right wing. She would always say some politically correct crap like we all bleed red or there's only one race, the human race. That's not politically correct. That's accurate. I don't know what to say at that time. I know what I would say now. Animals bleed red, but they're not considered human. If there's only one race, the human race, how's it possible for anyone to be a racist? Well, because race is an artificial construct, but never mind. I was sick of hearing her bullshit. One day, just for fun, I did the Roman salute. She got butt hurt as hell. You know, the stiff arm salute. They call it the Roman salute. Gotcha. She said, don't even get me started on that evil man. I'm getting you started. I did it a couple more times. She said if I do it again, I was going to get detention. Thank God I'm not in Germany, where the punishment would have been a lot harsher. Like a week later, I was walking into class. PC teacher says, hi, how are you? I said, final solution. Just like that, I ruined her good mood. She went off on me. How dare you be a Hitler supporter? He would cheerfully have killed you, your non-blonde hair and no blue eyes having behind. You're not even white. Well, he did get Germany out of economic recession. He was the Führer and Chancellor of the Reich. He was one of history's most powerful men. What's not to like? I was in ROTC, and I was wearing my Class B uniform. As I was leaving, I said, Heil. She said that I'm wearing a uniform that stands for diversity, equality, and justice for all, and that I should be ashamed for having those beliefs and wearing the uniform. Awesome. She's sharp as a tack, but all those smarts came at the expense of her common sense. I was in the hallway, and I dropped my shit. I was picking my stuff up, and PC teacher saw me. She said, are you all right? I said, white power. She then said, I would not be saying it if I was Hispanic. PC teacher said it was tragic that I was a Hitler fan and that he was notoriously evil. Well, I am a fan of all things evil. Hey, man, she brought all this fucking BS on herself. If she would have just stuck to teaching chemistry, I never would have said shit. I felt like a champion. She couldn't shame me or convince me to think like her. And the most fucked up part, despite all her virtue signaling and shilling, Mrs. White guilt still got called a racist. Ha ha! Drop the PC shit and I'll stop. A lot of stuff going on in fucking clown world. You better believe that there wouldn't be We'll Convert Your Children drag queen story hour losers running around loose. No Zog communist or liberal fake news media under Hitler's watch. Heil Hitler. Incel, Nazi, bang, bang. And somehow the right wing will make of this an excuse. They're already arguing that maybe this, he probably put that RWDS patch on as a fake, as a false flag. Because they cannot for the life of them cope with the reality that this is who they are. Oh, sure, Greg Aspott will come out and say, oh, this is not who we are. Yeah, it is, motherfucker. It really, really is who you are. This is what you want. This is what you desire. This is what you have chosen. How long before we do say that there is a state of war in this country? That a certain segment of the population has gone to war with us and deal with it accordingly? Things with the Klan got so awful that eventually President Ulysses Grant signed the Klan Act into law and used the military of the United States to break them into a million tiny pieces, relentlessly. It was largely successful. Then along came the election of 18 when, and Samuel Tilden and Rutherford B. Hayes, and the deal was struck that Hayes could be president if he would agree to withdraw Reconstruction from the South, so that the South could re-torment people of color who happened to live there and were maybe 15 years free. Flavio says, Mauricio Garcia, he certainly could have been a white supremacist. That's very possible. What I find weird is how Enrique Tarrio could be one. And yet he is. And hopefully, well, I'm sure he will be quite popular by the time he gets to federal prison. Hopefully he'll spend 20 or more years there. Maybe 30. 30 would be good. And, of course, fascism knows no color. This guy was a Nazi, Mauricio Garcia. He was a Nazi. Just like Spain had its fascists. Funny, we were talking about that just last week. Who knew? Oh, by the way, we are past the top of the hour. I have Phil Robster for an hour and 5 minutes now. And there's ever so much more to Phil Robster on. Oh, we're not done. Not by a long shot. Mm-mm. Anyway, the electricity will be off here in 3 days. Need to raise funds. Sorry, I tell you. I wish I was saying, you know what? It'd be great to raise some money because I want to go on vacation. No. Just trying to keep the electricity going. That's all. But to continue, yeah. Hey, David. All those pro-Nazi statements sound exactly like policies passed by Republican legislatures across the United States of America. Yeah, oddly similar, aren't they? Wonder why. Do we really? Because I don't think we really wonder. Not here. Oh, no. Spanhauer, that poor man, Flavio says, but doesn't he rather make the argument that these images should be published? I think that they should be plastered on the offices of Republicans that enabled this. They should be hounded by these images, denounced by these images. Their sleep should be haunted by these images. And I think about that quite a lot myself, Flavio. I do. We said that when the Memphis police murdered Tyre Nichols. And we mentioned Emmett Till's mama. I want them to see what they did to my boy. But these firearms are the sacred cow of the Republican Party. And, well, who owns most of the mass media? There may be liberals on the air here and there, but the money is very decidedly Republican. So don't be thinking you're going to see those images. And I don't think I could take it. I don't know about you, Flavio, but I honest to God, don't think I could stand it. What a horror. Let's keep it going. And it does seem that some people are awakening to the reality here. Over on The View, they've got a couple of resident conservatives. Anna Navarro is one. Elisa Farah Griffin is the other. And they even get it, which is kind of amazing.
Don't let my face say anything. Look at the clip.
We've seen an increased number of shootings in states with easy gun laws as well as states with very strict gun laws. There has been a dramatic increase in the amount of anger and violence that's taking place in America. And what Texas is doing in a big time way, we are working to address that anger and violence by going to its root cause, which is addressing the mental health problems behind it.
So
I want to make something unequivocally clear. There is a disconnect between what the American public wants to see on gun safety and what elected officials in Washington and states want to see. So this is a Fox News poll, not a liberal outlet, a Fox News poll. 87% of Americans support background checks for guns. 81% support raising the minimum age to get a firearm to 21. 80% support red flag laws, mental health checks to buy a gun. 77% a 30-day waiting period. The list goes on. I'm a legal gunner, or my husband is. Most of my friends are legal gun owners, and all of us are horrified when we see guns get into the hands of people wishing to commit crimes, and we want to do more. And I would be willing to jump through more hoops to be able to legally own a gun.
Hold on. Just one second. I appreciate that it takes a lot to get a Republican to the point that Elisa Farah Griffin is at. It takes a lot. But she's not there yet. Because she has still not acknowledged to herself, apparently, that when you buy a handgun, when you buy an assault rifle, maybe not so much with like a 12-gauge turkey gun or a 30-06 for deer season, but when you buy a handgun or a semi-automatic assault rifle, it is almost impossible not to contemplate the possibility that at some point in time, and in fact acknowledge the reality that in the case of a handgun, you're buying it because you think at some point in time you are going to shoot someone with it. It's just a fact. Because that's what they exist for. I mean, even Lynyrd Skynyrd said it in 38 Special, for God's sakes. Ain't good for nothing except put a man 6 feet in a hole. And so, the potential exists with every single individual who owns those weapons. I mean, that they're going to use them. Or that they may feel at some point compelled to use them. And until we can reach that place existentially, Elisa Farah Griffin appears not to understand that the difference between a lawful gun owner and an unlawful gun owner is the letter L and the distance it takes for the trigger to cause the firing pin to strike the shell, which is a short distance indeed. Mauricio Garcia is a lawful gun owner. Why are we not talking about that? I am. You are. We are. Yeah, maybe Joe will talk about it in a couple of days. Or Mika. I don't know. Yeah, back to Elisa Farah Griffin and Anna Navarro.
To stop having kids and innocent people be massacred. D.C. is disconnected from it. Republicans in D.C. are disconnected from it, and they've got to act.
And that's right, and I'm glad you qualified it at the end, because it's a Republican issue. It's frankly not elected officials, because, you know, most Democrats want what I want, which is a ban on assault rifles, right? And I want it right now.
Yeah.
Again, we saw that it's what the president of the United States, Joe Biden, keeps asking for. We got a piddly little gun reform law because it's the only thing we could get passed for decades after things like this continue happening. And, you know, we should be angry. I keep saying we need to keep anger alive and channel it into the voting booth. I read things and you know, about this particular case that just this man who walked in, Stephen Spainhauer, he was the first one to respond. He's just a father who got called by his son. He said, the first girl I walked up to, I felt for a pulse, pulled her head to the side, and she had no face. He found a surviving child who had been struck and killed, and his mom, the child, the mom had been struck and killed as she shielded her baby. And he said, when I rolled the mother over, the baby came out. He came out. He was covered from head to toe, like somebody had poured blood on him. We cannot desensitize ourselves. We got to be pissed. We've got to be sad. We've got to be distressed. And we've got to vote.
And you got to stop voting for Republicans. That's actually the easy part. Are we just fundamentally constitutionally incapable of using logic, of looking at every other developed country in this world that, having seen these things, acted with some alacrity, and now they don't have these problems anymore? Is there something uniquely awful about the American people? These are not rhetorical questions. I'd like to have an answer. I really would. Are the people of the United States of America so essentially evil, so in service to some sort of bloodthirsty god, that we demand this? I don't know. Feels like it. But then again, the reason nothing happens in a godforsaken shithole state like Texas, sorry Texans, really, but you probably know better than I, is that they keep electing people who keep doing this to them. They've had multiple chances over the last 30 years to course correct. And they have chosen not to do so. Chosen not to do so. And therein lies the inquiry. We ask, sometimes tongue-in-cheek, from time to time, what people in, say, Georgia's 13th congressional district must be like. And what the people who sent folks like Louis Asparagus Gohmert to Congress must be like. We ask, what in the world is wrong with the people who live in that congressional district in Ohio that's so gerrymandered it looks like a malaria germ, that send Jim Jacket Off Jordan to Congress? Maybe it's time we get our tongue out of our cheek and really start asking the questions. What is wrong with those people? What is wrong with the people of Florida that put a shitty little racist, transphobic, homophobic, fascist asshole like Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis into power? What's wrong with them? Because something is wrong with them. I think maybe that is the beginning of the analysis. Something is fundamentally wrong with a significant number of the people of the United States of America who continue to do this to those of us who do not want it. And yet those Fox poll news numbers that Elisa Farah Griffin referred to are more than mere pluralities. They are sizable majorities. Most of the numbers above 70%. Eighty percent, 90%. In many ways, it feels like we're stuck in the same rut we were stuck in prior to 1861. As the abolition debate grew hotter, the Congress actually moved Democrats and Whigs alike to ban even the remotest mention of abolition of slavery in the House. And one heroic man, a former president of the United States who embraced going back to the House of Representatives, he's the only president ever so to do, John Quincy Adams, was such a procedural genius that he drove those slavery proponents to distraction. This was also the period of time when men in Congress frequently resorted to, how about that, gunplay, duels, broke out into fistfights on the floor of the House. But in 2023, who are the people who think that it is more important to have easy access to an assault rifle than think it is important for a woman not to have her face shot off? I don't know. Suppress the Nazis, suppress the incels. Maybe some of this goes down. But as long as we continue to hide behind, he's crazy, and not deal with root causes, the root horrors will continue. David said air is combustible right now down here. South Carolina, Stan. I take it that is not literal, but in fact is a representation of the tenor of the mood of people. Yeah. And at this point in time, all the Republican Party has is hate. That's it. That's all. And that's what leads to that level of combustibility that I think David is probably referring to. Bernadette, on the other hand, says the answer is simple. It's America's love for guns. Yes, it is uniquely awful. America is a gun, and our new national symbol is an AR-15. Good God, we had members of Congress who went to work wearing little AR-15 pins on their lapels. I think from now on, if I'm ever in an event where we say the Pledge of Allegiance, I have long since stopped saying under God. Because the original was, you know, I'm an originalist, and God wasn't in the original pledge. I think maybe there needs to be an act of social protest where a lot of people start saying one nation under guns with death and misery for all. Tara says, it's the guns. And it's Google that predicts who is likely to be a mass murderer and sends them to Fox News for radicalization and AR purchases. If you haven't started watching Mrs. Davis yet on Peacock, do please. It is entirely another time. I tell you what, I'm going to take a quick break, and be right back, because there's more than just this story out there, and we will delve into all of them. I beg your kind patience. I will return shortly. My humble apologies, but, well, I'm back. Where do we go from here? That segues. Another of the domestic terrorists who attacked the capital of the United States on January the 6th, 2021, has been sentenced. Former Navy reservist Hatchet Speed, really? It got sent up the river. He was convicted in March of one felony count of obstruction of official proceeding, four misdemeanor charges. He had previously been charged and convicted with possessing three unregistered silencers. He went up on the silencer charges for 3 years last month. And today he got an additional 4 years in the stir for his role in the domestic terror attack on the capital of the United States on January 6, 2021. He's also been hit with a $10,000 fine and $2,000 in restitution. In describing his motives, DOJ prosecutors said that Hatchet Speed hoped the mob's resistance would spark a larger uprising that would so intimidate Congress that then-Speaker Nancy Pelosi would resign out of fear for her life. Those were his words. As I said, he was a former Navy reservist, and he became a little Hitler fanboy and decided he really liked the idea of street brawling. You know, kind of the way the Proud Boys and the Boogaloo Incel Tactical Command Headquarters executive staff do. And eventually he went all the way there and started calling for the extermination of every Jew in the United States. Because of course he did. And once again, we'll say it, this country has a far greater Nazi problem than most of the people in this country understand or want to understand or even want to know. Randy Radar said, firearms are a false sense of power and respect. If Mitch and the Supremes didn't make work in America suck so much, there wouldn't be so much of a need for them. But every shooting is not a mass shooting. Every shooting is not a Nazi. So many of them do take place in Texas, though. Oh, yeah. So, 20-year-old Alejandro Dominic Martinez was in an argument with Ruby Mora, 21. This happened last month. Ruby Mora, at the time, had their daughter in her arms. Ruby Mora said, "You give me back my gun right now." Wrong accent, I know. Mora was still holding the baby, and they began struggling over the firearm. And then, oops, blam, pray. The gun just went off. That's what they like to say. It just went off. And they killed little 8-month-old Rosalinda. because little Rosalinda's life was not as important as those horrible parents' access. To firearms. Freedom! Right? Sure. I guess. Freedom. Then there's Stewie. You'll shoot your eye out, kid. Bang! Rhodes. Convicted for his role in January the 6th. He is looking at a pretty stiff sentence, up to 25 years. Pure brass. His pettifoggers have filed his sentencing memo begging for leniency. The memo says, among other things, that Stuart Rhodes served in the military, that he had an honorable discharge from the U.S. Army, that he did academic achievements in his after Army career. But then, and this is where the brass comes in, it is imperative, the sentencing memo says, imperative, that the court give great deference to Mr. Rhodes for the 12 years of service and dedication of the Oath Keepers, as evinced through the organization's history of community involvement and volunteerism in times of natural disasters and civil unrest. It should be stated that the perception cultivated by some mainstream media outlets, politicians, and activists portraying the Oath Keepers as a right-wing extremist group is simply not borne out by the facts. Yeah, except for the part where he and the other Oath Keepers attacked the Capitol of the United States to try to keep the lawful transfer of power from taking place. I mean, that's a thing. Hopefully the judge will credit the lawyers for the for the brazenness, but go ahead and send him up for 25 years. And then, of course, there's E. Jean Carroll versus Donald Trump, where closing arguments are underway. It turned out that Nitwit Nero was every bit the chicken shit that he always has been. Again, my filthy morning habit today. It was almost gleeful the way that they celebrated the fact that Nitwit Nero wouldn't testify.
Or you can do the right thing now and be where most of America is.
Yeah, and also the kids who have grown up afraid for their lives, witnessing these things, they're going to run for office and they're going to beat you. Like, do we have to wait that long for the people who are living through this nightmare from the beginning of their lives, or finally, they're the ones who are going to step up because you can't?
Yeah.
Still ahead on Morning Joe, new polling shows President Biden trailing former President Trump in a 2024 matchup. We're digging into those numbers and what they could mean in the race for the White House. Plus, Donald Trump misses the deadline to testify in the civil rape case against
him. But he said he was going to go to New York.
Anyone surprised he didn't show up?
But he said he was going to go. He lied? Did he lie? Because he said, I'm going to go to New York and confront her.
Right. We are hearing from the former president in newly released deposition tapes. Those are fascinating. Also this morning, Congressman Pete Aguilar and the House's third ranking Democrat is our guest amid the ongoing fight over the debt ceiling.
You know, some days are just diamonds. So while I was running that clip, my great big hefty Electrovoice RE20 that I've been using here for 20 years, 15, more than 15, 18, just decided to fall off the boom. So I'm going to have to beg your kind indulgence again for a second while I put the studio back together. This is an evening. I'll be right back. Okay, so that problem was solved, at least in theory. I can't remember the last time this thing was off of its... that I even had removed it from the boom. But just... boom. I'm just glad it didn't... I'm glad it happened while I was running the clip. And not when, you know, I had the mic on and was actually... because I probably would have bashed my... head trying to get it off the floor. It's a Monday. It's just a Monday. That's all it is. You mean he lied? In the closing arguments, Joe Takapenis did the time-honored thing of, you know, when you have the law, pound on the law, when you have the facts, pound on the facts, and when you have neither, pound on the table. And he actually had the gall to whine to the jury. And he said, I couldn't call any witnesses to disprove a negative. You can't disprove a negative. And said Nitwit Nero would never have done it because he wouldn't risk throwing his life away. Never mind the fact that he is, in fact, Rollo Tomasi, the man who always gets away with it, for those of you who love, as I do, the movie L.A. Confidential. Arguing to the jury, he said, Joe Tocopina said, Apprentice over, Trump Tower over, everything over. Think about it. Of course, this doesn't it doesn't jibe with the fact that dude said, I'm a celebrity, you know, when you're a celebrity, you can just grab him by the... Oh, Jesus, it's disgusting. But A. Jean Carroll's lawyer, Michael Ferrara, who is Robbie Kaplan's law partner, rebutted Joe Tocopenis' whining and said, you know, I can't call any witnesses to disprove a negative. Michael Ferrara said, I have an idea for him. It's a little late, but maybe call Donald Trump to the stand. And since it's not a Fifth Amendment criminal case, Michael Ferraro was able to look at the jury and say, he never looked you in the eye and denied raping Miss Carroll. He never did that. So they've got a little jury, they'll have a little jury form, and it'll have a blank on it, and it'll have a couple of questions, you know. Did Donald Trump rape E. Jean Carroll? Did he defame E. Jean Carroll? If yes, how much do you want her to have? And hopefully they've got a really, you know, nice, brand new, fresh package of pens, and they could just draw that, make the dollar sign, and make a one, and a comma, and start making zeros after zero after zero after until they're wrist cramped. I got an idea. How about put your client on the stand? Yeah, no, I don't think so. And you know, they mentioned in the Morning Joe clip about that poll that shows Biden trailing Nitwit Nero. I don't know what to make of that. Your thoughts are welcome. What a horror. I mean, that hits deep. He could win. Be kind of hard to win in prison. Rooting for the prosecution. Oh, and back to Texas for a minute, because this is special. I live for stories like this. Not because of... Well, I hate the horror of it. And the trauma of it. Namely, representing Brian Slayton. He's a member of the Texas Ledge, y'all. And he is a good, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Christian, Republican. In fact, Brian Slayton is one of the aforementioned good God-fearings who has screamed from the rooftops, shouted for anyone who would listen to hear about the dangers of the groomers. You know where the story's going, right? You do, sure. Well, an investigating committee in the Texas House has recommended Brian Slayton's expulsion from that body. Why? Because he engaged in sexual misconduct with an underage girl who was an intern on his staff. He literally groomed her. Because that's... That's what grooming is. We don't even have to predict it anymore. We can just sit around and wait for it to happen. Oh, and in the midst of all the horror out of Texas, one we may miss. And so I wanted to make sure that I got to the story. Speaking of groomers, in Oklahoma, Stan, a guy named Jesse McFadden wrought horror. Jesse McFadden had been in prison for rape. And child sexual abuse. Groomer! Not a drag queen, by the way. Cishet man. White. And he had groomed, at the time she was 16, he had groomed a girl named Caitlin Babb. And eventually she caught on to what he was up to, and she went to police and turned him in. He'd just gotten out of prison on the previous sentence. And she was going to testify against him in a child sexual abuse case. Well, Jesse McFadden, this past weekend, and bear in mind that while he was in prison, he groomed her, he convinced her that she and he would be together forever. And then when the truth came out about who he was and what he was doing, he began to threaten her. Because she wouldn't refuse to testify. And she said, I thought I was protecting people. I thought this was going to keep him from hurting more people. He took away my innocence, my childhood. I didn't want him to do that to anyone ever again. Instead, Jesse McFadden wrote a note saying, this is all your fault. I told you this is what I would do. This is what I'm doing. This is entirely on you, and went about the business of murdering 14-year-old Ivy Webster, 15-year-old Brittany Brewer, 15-year-old Michael Mayo, Tiffany Guess, age 13, 17-year-old Riley Allen, and 35-year-old Holly McFadden, his wife. The prosecution of this man had been stumbling along since 2017. Ms. Babb said, they could have prevented these deaths. This never should have happened. I don't know how many times I told them, he's a dangerous man. You're putting little girls in danger. I don't know how many times I screamed at the top of my lungs for someone to care. Now look at what happened. And the Muskogee County, Oklahoma District Attorney, a guy by the name of Larry Edwards, is maintaining radio silence. Have you heard or seen that story? Because I haven't seen the coverage. Six dead children, six dead teenagers, and one dead adult. He was a manipulator. He was a groomer. He messaged her and said, I did exactly what I promised I would do when I got out of a marketing job making great money. When I got out, I got a marketing job making great money, and I was being advanced, been there 2 years now, and made a great life like I promised I would do with you. Now it's all gone. I told you I wouldn't go back. This is all on you for continuing this. Wonder what the excuse Keith Self, representing Keith Self,
I was in the Army Rangers for 25 years,
would make about this. Well, you know, criminals hit soft targets. So I guess those six kids and that one grown woman should have all had guns pointed at what? Hell of a Monday, huh? It really is a hell of a Monday. Okay, so we are at the top of the third hour. We are a goose egg this evening. The fundraising goal is at $605. And we'll be lights out in 3 days. Actually, not 3 days, 2 days and change. If we could alleviate that, that would be great. Lines are open, by the way. If you would like to participate in the program, you're more than welcome to. You can, the stress line is still on. And that's 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And, of course, on Skype, Robin Kincaid Horn. Kincaid and Horn are one word, R-O-B-Y-N. Had that for about 3 weeks now. If you want to, send me a contact request. I'll approve it, and we'll be chatting merrily away. Yeah, no kidding, Roush. Lassie, get the sheriff. And please like and subscribe to the podcast. Leave a comment. Oh, I had a note from Brother Deacon Asa earlier. Keith Self said, God, his God, is absolutely in control of our lives. Therefore, God directed the murderer to go mow those people down. I think we're in agreement with Representative Keith. Yeah. Yeah, back to Texas just for a second. In the Texas legislature today, Shock. The Raise the Age gun bill passed out of committee. It made it out of committee, so it will go to a full floor vote in the Texas House of Representatives. This bill would require angry young white men to wait until they're 21 before they can buy their AR-15. Instead of 18 as it is now. Two Republicans, Sam Harless and Justin Holland, joined all six Democratic lawmakers on the committee and passed the bill out of committee by an 8-5 vote. I won't make a prediction, but one wonders if it has a chance on the floor. And the debate about it will be absolutely nauseating. In fact, the chair of the committee, Representative Ryan Guillen, said he wasn't going to bring the bill up for the vote this morning. But it happened after all, but he said he wasn't going to bring it up for vote because he didn't think it could pass in the full Texas House. And then the Uvalde families sprang into action. And they held a protest, and they held a news conference. And the next thing you know, Representing Guillen told reporters, I'm considering bringing the bill up for a vote. But he wouldn't answer any questions about why he changed his mind. That bill was authored by Representative Tracy King, a Democrat from Uvalde. So I don't know. Pray, I guess. Oh, and an update on representing Brian Slayton. Groomer! Well, the committee recommended his expulsion, so instead he resigned. The resignation letter was one for the ages.
This is to inform the people of my legislative district, the governor of the state of Texas, and the House of Representatives that I hereby resign my position as a member of the legislature effective immediately. It has been an honor to represent my friends, neighbors, and the great people and communities of House District 2. They voted overwhelmingly to send me to the Capitol as their representative in two elections, and I worked daily to meet their expectations when I wasn't grooming an intern. No, I added that part. My decision today is to ensure that their expectations will continue to be met by a new representative who will also work hard on their behalf. I'm grateful to my many colleagues in the House who fought with me to improve our state for all Texans, except the one that I was sexually abusing. Added that part, too. And those who, even when we could not agree, extended their friendship. Here it is. Tinkling whorehouse piano playing in the background. I really need some tinkling whorehouse piano music to play for these. I look forward to spending more time with my young family and will continue to find ways to serve my community and all citizens across our great state.
Maybe start by staying away from the underage girls, groomer. Because he is. And just the same, some maggot replies to the tweet with the resignation letter, all caps, Soros victory! Another respondent said to, it's the drag queens who are the sexual predators, not me. No, don't be silly. Stop looking at me. Look at them. They're the enemy. Don't pay attention to the passed out intern on my couch and focus on the real issue. Signed, every anti-LGBTQ politician ever. He got in just under the wire because the vote to throw him out of the legislature was going to be tomorrow. Oh, wait. Okay. Slayton, just detail-wise. Slayton is 45 years old. Slayton is married. Slayton has precious little children. And his intern was 19 years old. She was underage to drink. And so he got her liquored up at his apartment and then fucked her. And then he tried to use his power and his position to cover it all up. Meanwhile, the chairman of the Republican Party of Texas is a maggot named Matt Rinaldi, and he thanked the House of Representatives, quote, for responding swiftly and appropriately to the reprehensible actions of Representative Slayton. The misconduct described in the General Investigative Committee report should never be tolerated and is proper grounds for expulsion. These actions have betrayed the trust that the people of Representative Slayton's district put in him as an elected official, and he has rightly resigned. We are encouraged that this investigation signals that the House has entered a new era of accountability where all members will be held to the same fair and high standards. But he tried to resign his way out of it, but a maggot by the name of Andrew Murr from Kerrville, Texas, said, though Representative Slayton has submitted his resignation from office, under Texas law he is considered to be an officer of this state until a successor is elected and takes the oath of office to represent the Texas House District. So we're going to go ahead with the expulsion tomorrow. Goodness. Every Republican accusation is either projection or confession. It really is that simple. Oh, and thank you to Mark. Mark in Florida. Thank you, Mark. Mark just saved us from being a goose egg this evening. We are now down to $583 to go. And Darlene in Connecticut just put up a $50 challenge. So the next $50 that come in get doubled, and that would take us down to $483, which is a step in the right direction toward keeping the suits at Appalachian Power in beer and Skittles. I hope. I put a little photograph up on social media yesterday, or today actually. And I'm daring to hope that spring is finally here and that we won't be running any more space heaters, because those things are just slaying me. That's part of why the power bills have been so godforsaken high. Just gotta make it through May. Thank you. Thank you, Darlene, for the challenge. Thank you, Mark, for jumping in. Somebody's on the stress line. Let's run over there and see who. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Robin, it's Mark.
Oh, speak of the devil and he appears.
I tell you, it's just, what a coincidence. We couldn't do that if we tried any harder.
No. Sorry. No. How are you?
I'm great. I listen to you every night. I actually I'll grab dinner and eat in the back room, and I have you listening. I have you on my phone. I'm always told to use my earplugs or whatever, but I should put you on the phone, on speaker, keep it turned down. I have
you sound
other
great.
Things on television. And, well, thank you. You sound great as well, by the way, and it's very good to hear your voice. You sound wonderful. And I'm happy for your happiness. And it's more courage than most of the Marines I ever served with. I mean that from the bottom of my heart. Very courageous very dedicated to your value system, and I have much respect for your courage and your honesty. Always have. And it's just a little more profound from a different perspective, but equal results. I'll sit in the back room, Robin, and I don't mean this from an insulting standpoint, but I'll kind of nod off. But you're still speaking on my chest. I'll wake up and go.
The number of people that I put to sleep is legendary. I actually worry sometimes. You know, maybe don't listen to me in the car.
Well, you know, I've been listening to you for not quite as long as the whole show, but your voice is melodic and when powerful, when you need to be, and other people are already, you know, ramped up when you are being powerful about a particular subject, whichever the case. But it's not, and it doesn't drone on. You have a very comforting voice. You're well spoken, and you're a tremendous writer, a gifted writer, very insightful. I'll read your writings. It actually helps me maintain my English edge. I went to a high school, one of the few high schools that still offered Latin, other than the Catholic schools, a public school, and all the rich kids were going and taking Latin. I thought, you know what, I need to get in there and compete. And being the son of a blue collar worker, that's just the way I was being reared, so to speak. So in any case, I took Latin, and the following year I took it again because I didn't pass that preceding year. So the year after that, or I should say the third year into this story, I found myself in Central America at the incipiency of Iran-Contra without anyone telling us that. And that actually didn't transpire at the very beginning of my tour, but it got underway and actually kind of kicked into another level right as I was leaving to go to Argentina and work two more years down there at the U.S. Embassy. So it's very, very exciting. And I look back in retrospect, I was learning a lot more than I realized I was learning and filling in the pieces and the names and the faces. I went, oh, okay, that makes sense. Okay, this, you can kick that out. And so it just was such a great education. I wished I was as educated as you are, and I listen to some of your conversations, and I always compliment you on that because, you know, you can throw out stuff and you know so much about the Latin culture that you've taught me things, many things. So I find it very exciting. I'm like, she knows this, she knows that, you know, it's very amazing. Talking about something the other night, it was something maybe food related concerning Latin America. And I was like, oh, that's incredible. I didn't realize that. But, I really called tonight, I guess I got unfortunately inspired by what took place at the Outlet Mall there in Texas. All of the shootings always bother me. All in any shootings bother me because I care about people. But the Allen Mall outlet, and then what I've just read, I've been busy all day, so I just kind of jumped on the internet and various sources. I actually go to Facebook and I'll type in a name once I get the shooter's name and then see the articles that pop up and then check the sources. Or I'll read something from The Guardian or The Intercept or whatever it is. But I didn't realize this guy, he was, I just saw this, and maybe you've already mentioned it, he was kicked out of the Army after only 3 months.
I did see that.
Joined in 2008.
Yeah, he got bounced right after basic, didn't he?
Well, you know, you figure 3 months and boot camp in the Army is probably a good portion of that, 2 months at least. So didn't take long. He must have said or done something repeatedly or something because, and then I just saw a photograph of him. I think I saw that on Facebook it was Twitter, through Huffington Post, but they show him without a shirt on with two huge,
swastika over his left breast, over his heart.
Correct.
And then the Schutzstaffel, the lightning bolt SS on his arm.
Yeah, still swollen from their, you know, still, yeah, they're still swollen puffy from getting a huge.
You noticed that too. Yeah, they're
I'm like,
they're raised.
You know, and not to sound like an ignorant racist, but I, you know, he just at the picture, just at the glance of the a person's chest. I thought, well, he does think he's white, you know. Have some pride in your heritage, no matter what we are, you know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, without being overboard about it, I don't know what the hell. My mother told me right before my father passed away. I asked her and I said, Mom, what was the story with you and my dad's mom? And he said, well, I could never get close to her. And I, what do you mean? He goes, she said, whenever I would go visit your dad, and he was, kind of raised half on and half off in the project in the state capital of Springfield, Illinois. And, she'd go over to the projects and visit my father. And the grandmother was always kept literally physically off at a distance. And so she tells me right before she passes that she didn't know if she was black or Native American. And I look at my father and I listen to him, and he actually, what made it more difficult for a child to interpret was he had gone to black grade schools and black high school and junior high his whole life. So he had a lot of black American, attitudes and perspectives on a lot of things. And he's one of the first coaches that I was aware of in that time frame in the early 60s. He was going around and scouting kids on other teams and then go and then ask to meet their parents and then drafting those children through the parents onto our team and say, listen, I'll provide the transportation. I'll pick them up after work. I'll bring everybody home. And he was very, very dedicated. And we went on to become city champs quite often because of the players that he could put together on a team. So we were kind of like the, whoever that was in the beginning, you know, like LA or New York when they first had the black players. We were kind of a version of that there in Little Springfield. And, so I had a lot of neat experiences, grew up listening to jazz in the household and also, on Saturday mornings, John Phillips, Sousa marching music. So I'm like, man, I'm getting it all here. But, you know, I didn't know who the hell it was, but it was a good experience because my father was exposed to a lot from Stan Getz to, some country people. And of course, Cash, Johnny Cash and all of that. I just didn't get any doors closed. And he was very forward minded, when it came to gender on people. And, if you were a girl in the family and you wanted to achieve what a boy was trying to achieve, then you certainly could try to do that. And he would help you just as dedicatedly. And actually my sister ended up being, I think she was nationally ranked in BMX bicycling, and my stepbrother was as well. But my father put a lot of effort into both kids right after I went off to the service. And so he was a man of his word. And, and then of course I've maybe mentioned before that my step grandfather was a National League umpire, president of National League Umpires Union. And a former coal miner.
I had no idea. No, I know about the coal mine part. I didn't know about the umpire part.
Yeah. Yeah. He would coal mine and I guess when it gets too hot down in the mines, and he coal mined in the, he umpired, I take that back. He umpired down in the, Carolinas in the beginning in the 50s, World War II veteran. And then I guess when it became so inhospitable, they'd come out of there and he ended up, umpiring for Cash, and he was good at it. He was, but his name is Al Barlick. He was very loud. In the 60s, I would take a shower after I'd go to work with my dad at the plant. My dad would have the transistor radio on in the break room, the shower room, whatever. And you could hear his voice come over the Bush Memorial Stadium over the radio. I'm like, that guy went on to be my step grandfather. You know, but when he was off, he was always in bib overalls driving a pickup truck, passing out produce to people, you know, but when he got cleaned up, he jumped in his Cadillac, you know, and he had the Benelli shotguns, but he was a blue collar guy with, blue collar values. And oh my God, I met up with him in 1991, right after Desert Storm. I flew up to Chicago with my daughter, and, Al was there. It was a big family reunion. And, I hadn't even shook his hand practically 10 seconds, and his first words out of his mouth were, "What do you think of that fucking piece of shit Newt Gingrich?" And I went, "Oh my God, Al's not changed. He's the same person." He hated Republicans. He was hardcore. I mean, he didn't pull any punches. He and they loved him. Augie Bush, I guess, liked him, and Red Shandies and all those people. He was a good umpire. But, you know, I'm just looking at the shooter, Bill Robin, and I'm seeing that he was a devotee. And then I just saw that he had studied, it doesn't take a lot of genius, but he had studied the ebb and flow of the mall.
Right.
It was this was a pre-surveillanced assault, and you know, for his skills and capabilities. But he, and I think the thing that I was going to call the show the other night before the shooting, and I thought, you know, Mark, you could be just kind of reaching for a subject, or it could be a little melodramatic, not melodramatic, but I've been trying to think what kind of move that they, the MAGA extremists would make when it comes to, this type of behavior. And I've been talking to a friend of mine, who thinks normal, and he's a trades fellow union tradesman. And I got to thinking that it's, and you say this a lot on your show, that, you know, that it's not over, that they're going to come back, they're going to try something again. And I'm not saying that the Allen Mall, it was it. No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is there's that level of misdirection and hatred still floating around out there. And it's real, and it could be collected, and it could be redirected in an organized fashion to their advantage. And what I'm thinking could occur, just throwing this out there, that you could see, you remember when they took over the bird park out west, was that in Oregon or Washington?
Mallard.
They took that over, and I thought, you know, that was kind of a wise move, because there was nobody there, and it had a lot of symbolism. You know, took over a federal park. Is that a state park, honey? You know, it's, you know, like, what do we got going on there? And where's the SWAT team? And where's the border patrol? You know, it just gets everybody.
Hindsight is always 20/20, Mark. And looking back,
apparently.
Looking back, it seems like maybe it would have been a good move to send a couple of Predator drones in with some Hellfire missiles and be done with those assholes.
Oh, well,
maybe they would have thought twice before they attacked the Capitol.
Well, and actually, that's really where we're at. And you know, the Marines have the drone units already, and the Marine Corps. I'm not a professionally educated person, but from what little I understand, according to the U.S. Constitution, that the U.S. Navy can be dispatched anywhere there's water contiguous or internally to the United States. They are authorized to patrol the waterways of America.
The United States Navy ran up and down the Cumberland River, the Tennessee River, the Mississippi River all during the Civil War. You're absolutely correct. But the problem is that's during time of warfare. And if you were to use the military to drone strike, say, you know, a bunch of hard-cased, dead-ender right-wing POSs, you would be in violation of the Posse Comitatus Act.
Well, I get that, and I understand that, and I'm not proposing. I just find it amusing, but it does get kind of interesting, because you look at the nature of the weapon system. It's, those aren't my fingerprints on there. I don't know who was behind the, you know, of course they're going to figure out who it is, but,
sure.
But there is a lot of sophistication, and we're watching what's happening in Ukraine. You see their capacity. There's a lot to it. And we're going to have, you know, we have the best stuff, the tiniest, and we have the largest, capabilities. But you know, so what I was thinking, that if you look at the Bird Reserve takeover, and how well in my opinion, just from the outside looking in, how well the Obama administration handled that. They kept cool, and they had FBI there under, and then they set up a headquarters and were doing great surveillance from what I read in articles. And they just narrowed it down to a couple nuts and then basically pulled them over, and the guy reached for a gun. I'm like, dude, most of the time you really shouldn't shoot at cops. You should never really shoot at cops, but shooting at a cop,
they will shoot back.
That's kind of
a lot.
They'll shoot back, and they get paid to shoot. It's like, you know, it's like, I think I can hit that pitcher. Well, jump in that batter's box, bro. We'll see what you know. There's pros that can't hit that pitcher, and you think you can? I'm like, I don't. So, you know, so now you throw in the fact you're going up against FBI people, which half of them are going to be probably former officers in some branch of either another government agency or military branch. So they're going to be sophisticated people who listen to the details. So you really kind of, they're kind of out of touch. But what concerns me is if we lose, like, if you see like a sympathetic takeover of a southern capital, and it sounds kind of crazy, but let's say they took over a Tallahassee, where you'd have sympathetic insiders that could put on a front of defending and say, well, you know, we're left with no other options. We're going to have to let them control this building. You know, like if you glanced at the Michigan failure, or if you looked at the Wisconsin, where actually the union people did leave when they eventually were asked or were tired of being there. So we have seen some capitals with some action lately, to include West Virginia. You know, so my thing is, it's a concern that I would have that if a southern capital, whether it was in Tennessee or in Arkansas or somewhere, and then another one gets taken over, and to where it's all pre-orchestrated, pre-organized, and all in defense still of Cittadini. I don't think he is sophisticated enough as a person, other than to know and look and nod and say, you know, let's go with that. However he talks, but you do a great Cittadini. But saying that would be a target that have much symbolism, and where the citizens could have their perspectives, but where really nothing's going to happen that they didn't want to have happen prior, during, or after the event. It's going to be a controlled event, and where, so then if you say, like, if you do look at Florida and they've got their militia that Van Clausewitz is asking for, so he gets his guard, his Florida guard, which is not the National Guard, the Florida Militia, whatever their stupid name is.
It's his private army.
His private army, which are, and actually it's being ran by the last I read, the guy they chose is a former Marine. I said, okay, well, let me look up a Marine Corps officer. Let me look this son of a bitch up. And I think he was a full-bird colonel, maybe a brigadier general selectee, or maybe a brigadier general, but maybe a full bird colonel, because even those breaks at a certain rank can make a difference in the Marine Corps, because they have so few of them on active duty, especially. Well, this guy is actually a former, I'm not putting him down out forthrightly just as a person, but if you look at true command capabilities, he's an air winger primarily. So commanding troops is usually a reach for people with air backgrounds to begin with, just from a human standpoint. Not saying it can't be done, but it's not very often that it does occur, especially on active duty. You don't see that ever, almost ever. And he is not only an air winger, he has a lot of reserve time. And he's a Floridian, and I don't know if he is something in the commercial world, in the civilian world. He's got some kind of job where he's one of them, whatever, you know, a rich mover and shaker. So I'm like, you know, this guy's kind of a clown. He's not really, you know, it's not David Hackworth. You know, it's not people that have seen the shit, been in the shit, and can, you know, start directing people on what to do. And I'm not saying he wouldn't be dangerous, but he has knowledge and he has the ability to do other things, you know, organizing. I'm not saying he shouldn't be paid attention to, of course, but you know, but these are little things that I pay attention to, not just because it was a stupid Marine, but, you know, these are real. So let's say that they were to take over, the militia would be. And so now they're going to occupy, and they say, well, you can't allow federal people in here. And now you've already got that stupid argument where, oh, the sheriff say this and well, we're not going to abide by them federal laws. And I'm like, bro, what
you
this?
Do that. You know, really do that well, far too well.
I've been working on that one, but that goes back many years, apparently. Wow, boy. But anyway, Robin, I'm just throwing that out. But it's just sad to see this the whole shooting, like all of the shootings, and like the poor Honduran family that was slaughtered. And what idiot? I guess he thought he was a redneck too, because he said, "Oh, this is my property. I can shoot here. This is my property. I can shoot my gun." I said, That's right wing bullshit right there. That's their propaganda. You know, they think they can just, I'm like, bro. So any case, I know I always sign off by saying I'm behind enemy lines, but You really are. Yeah.
And in fact, it's there's a certain synchronicity to you calling in, because the next story I had pulled up was actually real live, no kidding, books that have been banned and considered pornography in Florida.
Is
amazing.
Is it Betty White? Is it a Betty White? No.
Well, no. I mean, we had that story last week, but let's see.
Yeah.
Houses and Homes, a book for children about how people the homes people live in. The Sleeping Beauty, pornography. Guess What?
Oh my God!
Yeah. Jelani and the Lock by Lorenzo Pace. There's nothing pornography. There's nothing about whatsoever. The Kite Runner by Khalid Hosseini. Beloved by Toni Morrison. Forever by Judy Blume.
That's terrible, man.
19 Minutes by Jodi Picoult, who is a wonderful author. I read her book. It was a collaboration. It was called Mad Honey. And it was just it was a heartbreaking novel. My God, this is ridiculous.
Well, you know, they went after the Roberto Clemente story. And,
yeah.
I guess what, Huck Finn's one of them. I'm like, because of one word in there or whatever, it's not like Samuel Clemens is sitting around cussing like a sailor. I'm like, he just threw the term out, and it's in perspective of that era where that word was, not as vicious, because people just used it, because it was just like using some other lazy word. It wasn't spiteful, though it was used in a spiteful fashion as well, I'm sure. But in any case, it wasn't used in the book that way. It was just a description. I don't know. It's just they're reaching, as we would say, they're reaching. And I guess it doesn't take much to get, I don't know how many parents have to complain, but they can pretty much just bring it up and that's pulled off the shelf. I have to say, going to, Ulysses S. Grant Middle School in the 70s, the late 60s and early 70s. And then they put these book lists out in front of us. And I'm like, okay, Fahrenheit 451, 1984 and Animal Farm. And the older I get, I went, holy shit. Am I glad I read those books, because we've been here for a while. And I'm like, it's great for me. There's a lot of stuff I didn't read. And I used to love Twilight Zone. So I'm like, that made a lot of sense. And I guess Twilight Zone, did you see that, Robin, where it's kind of trying to make a little comeback, of course,
really?
Without Rod Serling. But I just saw that.
Yeah, I saw that. Who was it? It was streaming for a while. Yeah, it was.
TV.
Was it?
Or something like that.
Yeah. I saw a few of the episodes.
Yeah, something like that. Oh, yeah. Oh, you have already?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Any good?
I thought so. I mean, Jordan Peele, wasn't he behind it?
Uh-huh. Oh, I don't know, Robin. I just caught it before I officially fell asleep last night. I'm like, hey, that's killer. I have to check that out, because the first time I saw the commercial, we got different TVs in different rooms, and not all of them have the same, stuff on. I don't know who's behind it, but just the concept alone, and I think it makes a lot of sense from a time standpoint, because we sure are staring fascism in the face. I'm actually have a running conversation with a dude that I tried warning. I played school with him. I played baseball with him. He was not a bad athlete. He played college baseball. He's a college graduate, and he went on to become a millionaire. He's stumbled into a couple things with some kind of medical machinery deal and stuff, and that's fine. I really am happy for him as a human being. But somehow we reconnected over a high school reunion time frame, and I did see him in person and stuff, and we started talking, and he had a lot of very strong right wing views, and I wasn't amused with any of it, and I'm sure he's not amused with my views either. Which what did I say to him that I eventually started warning him about the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers. This is way before January 6th of
sure.
Whatever year that was, 2020? Yeah. And he just scoffed at it, and he also scoffed at the pandemic. I'm like, bro, you're in the medical business. And then yesterday, I stopped talking to him for over a year, and then when I saw all this bullshit come out with Leo, what's his name, Leo, and the Opus Dei people and all that, I'm like, holy shit! And it just dawned on me last night or today, he is an Opus Dei participant.
Yes.
And so I just Googled Opus Dei, and they go back. They were fascist in Europe.
Yes.
They helped set up this Franco. I mean, they're right. They're like
Jose Maria Escriva. Flavio reminded me the other night, and you know he was buddies with Franco, and the guy's well on his way to sainthood. That's sickening.
Oh, he still is, huh?
Yeah.
It takes a while to get your spot, but I didn't realize that. I didn't realize either one of those aspects, but I thought, good God, that's like the Vladimir Putin he is with his one religion over there. You know, it's okay. Don't speak bad about the guy in church.
Well, that's the thing. I guess you can't get on the Federalist Society list unless you're a member of some bizarre religious cult. I mean, Opus Dei.
Apparently.
Opus Dei, you know, Fat Dead Tony, Fappy, the lot.
Right.
And now we've got this new group of weirdos, People of Praise. And
what are they called, Robin?
People of Praise. That's the cult that The Handmaid was in. You know, Amy Covid Barrett?
Yes.
And she actually held the position, the official position, in that cult of Handmaid. That's what her title was.
That's like the business agent for a union local. That's the main squeeze. That's somebody.
I mean, the founders of that group were just weird with a capital woo. Allegations of like sexual servitude and the like.
Oh, sure, yeah. And she's on that list.
Well, I mean, obviously she made it to the Supreme Court.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying I did remember glancing at some information. I didn't recollect the Praise name that they run by, but there's some questions about her dazzleness. I don't know what you call it, man, but I'm sorry, it's just she's in other words, she ain't no saint either. I'm just saying, I don't know.
They're all crooks. You know, there's that old saying, behind every great fortune is a great crime, and here we are.
Correct. That's correct. And it's like the Republicans had that pseudo religious group that was meeting in Washington D.C. That, you know, they were primarily congressmen.
C Street.
Correct. And this is kind of like the religious perspective of that. It's kind of like, you know, we're showing up with the empty pockets, not so empty though in reality, but it's kind of like their version of C Street. That's the way I would psychologically, man, these. Good God.
But I mean, but you are, you know, you are down there behind enemy lines. And if you don't mind me picking your brain a little bit, you know, we hear from Scary Jerry about what it's like where he is. What are you seeing? What are you perceiving? I mean, are people just going merrily along with being transformed into a fascist state?
I have to say, where I am in Central Florida, where we have many retirees just pouring into the area, which this particular area in Central Florida is blowing up, all the way over to Citrus County, which is the west side of the state. It's a similar profile. We're getting people retiring from all over, and they're getting younger in retiring. Of course, I'm getting a little older, but they seem to like the thing with the Alaska lady. I mean, the villages, is a very red area. Now there, and that's about 30 miles away from me. I used to work down there. I helped build some of that place. We used to joke when I worked there. I used to say, you know, we can't afford to live here now. We probably, these will be the slums someday, but we won't ever be able to afford to live here. But we're building this place for these son of bitches. And they've got clubhouses. I built a clubhouse for an owner there. I'm kind of proud of building that clubhouse. It was a lot of neat work. You do a lot of indoor work and a lot of outdoor work on it. And they were nice looking buildings. And then, and I told that to a person one time. They go, do you know how many clubhouses are down there? I go, I don't. They go, we don't either, man. There's lots of them. But I just thought it was the only one I was built. You know, it's, oh, I built the clubhouse. They go, shit, there's 10 of them or 15 of them. Who knows? But, yeah, so this area is very red. Marion County, Florida is very red. It didn't always be this way. I've actually seen the book, so to speak, for this area. And there were, up until about 15 or 20 years ago, more registered Democrats here. Now, what I am seeing, and I think it would be, sharp for some very aggressive Democrats, it's your question, but they could jump in and grab a lot of the younger people that are coming here because their parents are here or their parents are retired here. And so they've moved here. That is a tremendous profile here, because if you get into a conversation with a lot of people, this is how a lot of folks are ending up here. Someone sells the house for $600K, comes here and buys one for $290 and slaps the rest in a retirement, you know. So whatever the case, they get a brand new house and it's not in this particular location, is driven a little bit by geography because the hurricanes don't hit you very hard here. The weather's not too extreme. You do get some coolness and the summers can be brutal. But when I say behind enemy lines, because the state, and I just had to remind myself of this, DeSantis only won 40,000 votes. And actually, had they not attacked the black candidate right before the election, who's to say it wouldn't have been even closer? And they hit him with a bum story and then made some accusations, and the FBI just dropped their case against him. They took him before a federal court, and I just saw two or three days ago that he walks clean of that. I don't remember what the charges were. I thought they were superficial when I first heard about the case. And in fact, they must have been to some degree, I would presume. But in any case, they just wanted him out of the way and it worked. So, but nonetheless, politically in the state, if you can't really go anywhere and have, I have to be cautious in who I'm having conversations with, not to the point of watching my voice, but I can get around certain people and know I'm okay. And I can get around other people and know that I'm probably not okay. And so I do have to watch it. I'm a big guy. And I'm still rather athletic and, I'm pretty handy for my age and everything, but I don't look for trouble, but I'm confronted because I do have a sticker on my vehicle. I have a couple stickers. They're not really flagrant. It's one's just Biden sticker and another one's a Marine Corps emblem and an American flag, but people will zoom in on that Biden. And I've been called communist. That is, people pull up next to me. Men and women, I had a dump truck behind me, blown horns. I'm like, dude, if I crawl out of this car, you'll shit your pants. They don't realize, you know, I'm over 6'3". I'm well over 200 pounds. I'm not going to jump out and just pound on you like a nutcase.
Yeah, but you're not the guy to scream at.
No, I'm like, you've made a mistake. But I will share this with you, Robin. And this would apply. Now Scary Jerry, and I listen to what he says, and his interpretation for his area is relatively right. A lot of Palm Beach, is going to lean left unless you get, east of, I-95, and then they start trending up quickly to the conservatives. And that happens to be where Trump and his friends are at. But they also have that island there, where after, like, if you're on the island working, as a tradesperson, putting in air conditioning or whatever the case, painting, you have to get your truck off that island and yourself, you know, because it's just how it's ran there. And you know, you come back across the waterway there, the intercoastal. But all in all, Palm Beach is pretty blue and Broward's pretty blue. Dade County used to be, pretty blue, but Dade is trending back because the Republicans have put a lot of pressure on the people there. Now I know that you know better, but you know, there's it's not all when people say Latin, it's, you know, it's like calling somebody, well, not to sound ignorant, but not Arab, but, you know, it's not just them all Mexicans, them Mexican Cubans, you know, that, you know, that it's
yeah, you
know,
we got your Mexican Mexicans, your Mexican Cubans, your Honduran Mexicans, your Salvadoran Mexicans, your Peruvian
correct.
Mexicans.
Yeah. That's correct. That's correct. And so, you know, and all the different groups do come with a perspective, but I do know, which is not your question, but I'm not saying it to be mean, but if you want to get in a real quick argument with a Cuban, at just about any age, probably, even, you know, over 50, or you could pick, especially like the 60 and 70 year old ones. And I'll say, hey, si hay más cubanos aquí o más mexicanos aquí, you know, and, you ask them that question and they're going to get hot real quick because they don't want to recognize that there are Mexicans there. Most of Miami, what we are looking at when a person goes to visit or drive through there on the way to the Keys, if they just look around, whether it's the new baseball stadium, football stadium, all of that was primarily built by Mexican Americans or Mexican workers. All your condominiums. Now the Cubans have graduated and they've gone into. They are not only electricians, but they'll own electrical contracting companies, or they'll do the, they've gone into, becoming the contractors, and the workers are Central American and many, many Mexican. There's a tremendous amount of Nicaraguans and Hondurans there. And there's Peruvians and, some Bolivians. Working in Miami, on and off since the 80s up until recently, you know, I find it very exciting and I'm able to communicate and get along and talk to people. And I've lived in some of their countries. So I feel at home, you know, I feel great. I can go anywhere and, you know, I'll get my, you know, cafe con leche or whatever. I'm good, bro. I have the espresso or whatever it is. I'm happy. I'm relaxed.
Yeah. Cafe Cubano. Heavenly.
Yes.
Even if it's decaf.
I love it. And yeah, well, even if it's decaf, it still kicked your ass. I worked a lot of night shifts down there, Robin, at the power plant, and even as a rookie cop in Miami, I just hit one of those coladas, and that would keep me up till 8 o'clock the next morning, literally all the way through the night, from 9 o'clock at night till 8 o'clock when the sun's coming up, and I'm driven back home. But Dade County is under constant pressure, and there's a lot of peer pressure. Now there's a Caucasian segment or section. Coral Gables has a lot of people that are progressive minded or that are involved with University of Miami, and you'll get patches of white liberals, and then of course the black liberal vote in Overtown and Liberty City. You can count on the black vote for Democratic votes, but the Cubans to maintain that propaganda is bullshit. I argue on YouTube with people about different things, but I have to be careful because I don't want to get shot there either. But I do stick up for what, you know, what the truth is. And I had a union electrician, an older guy than me at St. Lucie. He said to me, and he'd spent a lot of time in Florida. He said, you really want to piss somebody off? Ask him how many people Fidel had with him when he took over the country. And I hadn't heard the exact number, but he said it wasn't many. He said, you know, it's like 200 or 300 people in the end. He said that it wasn't. And a lot of the big money Cubans had fled Cuba in the '50s prior to Batista going down. They knew what was coming down because they sat and listened to people and they left. And then they were set up in Palm Beach. They were set up in Broward and Dade County. They had already had homes, a lot of them there, and had both residences. So this history goes back quite a ways. Florida and anything like Orlando, I don't know that I agree with the language they use, but they call it the I-4 corridor between Orlando and Tampa. And then that goes straight across the state to essentially Daytona. But that run, which goes across the state is a contested area by both political parties. And there's big billboards and there's big Confederate flags. Dealership size, and there's a lot of propaganda. There's a lot of wars going on. Most of the radio is, no surprise, is conservative controlled. I listen to 88.5.
That's just everywhere. I mean,
it's everywhere. That's in Sacramento.
One of the things that I find silly to say, but hopeful, is the fact that people in the know are predicting the demise of AM radio, and the little maggots are losing their shit.
Oh, because that's their dominion.
They own AM radio. AM radio. AM radio is Spanish language, religious broadcasting, and right wing hate, and that's all there is to it. But the frequencies that AM operates on tend to mess with electricity. You know, anybody that's ever been listening to AM radio during a thunderstorm knows that. You know, you hear the lightning on the radio, and so it's a non-starter for the rise of the electric vehicle. And so they're just
they're not even putting them in the vehicle, right, Robin?
Right. Yeah.
Didn't you say that the other day?
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's life in the slow lane. That's like coal didn't get put out of business because of Barack Obama. Coal got put out of business by natural gas.
And unfortunately, it's not out of business yet. I mean,
we know that.
They're fighting tooth and toenail to keep coal-fired power plants alive in this state. But the thing is, there's already ads running for 24. Joe Manchin saved 1 million coal jobs. Bullshit.
Right.
Joe Manchin is a multimillionaire coal broker who acts in his own best interest and no one else's. Period.
That's correct. He's a smooth operator for what he is, but he is for what he is, and that he's kind of like a polite Donald Trump. That's, you know, he's a little more well spoken, more controlled.
Yeah, he's a Donald Trump who's a little less grabby. You know, he does it behind closed doors instead of, you know, bragging about it in public.
He's a little less grabby. Yeah, I hope that's the case. He kind of creeps me out when I look at him. I'm like, that guy's kind of shady. I don't know what's gonna. But
go ahead. No, yeah.
Oh, I got nothing. I'm just cracking me up.
I was just thinking about something a woman I once knew told me. She said, a sailor is a creature with 3 legs and 12 hands. So, speaking of grabby.
That would fit some profiles that I'd seen floating around in the world. But and then the further you get off Broadway, the prices go down in Whisper Alley is where you end up. But any case,
I asked you the Florida question because I spend more time reading Florida news than is actually good for my mental health. Because it seems like it's always something horrid, and I worry a lot about the LGBTQ community down there. I mean, I think it was Clearwater where they've already canceled Pride for next month. There will be no Pride parade.
Well, you know, Ybor City has got some bars, drag bars, and that are pretty popular. I've been there a long time. I don't know their circumstances currently. I know in about where the Pulse Club is not going to have a national memorial there for whatever the true reason is behind that. They did run a neat commercial. I don't know if I was watching Free Speech TV or if it was regular commercial because we're so close to Orlando, we do see some. But it was a professionally done commercial. Like a national level type, but it was talking about the Pulse, and they did a quick snippet on the lady who basically created the Pulse club, and that's a tiny little building. I've been by it. I've not been in the Pulse nightclub, but I knew exactly where it was after I realized what it was. And there's another gay bar not too far from there. I don't know the name of it. And Orlando has a huge has a huge gay bar on, I think, Orange Blossom Trail, and it has kind of a country western motif, but they have, they actually have like a complex where people can come rent, condominiums, and apartments, or well, hotel rooms right next to it. It's like a big complex, and it's right in the kind of a commercial area. You wouldn't really know it was there unless you knew to be looking there, and there, lo and behold, and it's got big expensive pool and stuff. And then it has some history. I mean, it's been there a long time. I don't know that it's, I haven't been over there in a while since the pandemic. I've been off the road primarily, which has changed a lot of things in my life. I did lose some coworkers, to the pandemic. It's not that they didn't take it seriously. It's just that they kept working, because they were closer to the plant. And at my age, I said, I'm not going to risk it. I was going to trust, Trump's casualness with the subject. So I'm getting the F out of here. And, within a couple months, maybe that long. And two of the guys that were working literally on the same project I was on, they weren't on my specific crew, but we saw each other every day and worked shoulder to shoulder, sometimes lifting and moving things together. And always these were workers. But, you know, when you come in and out of a reactor, you can go into the one part of the plant where you have to machine, you have to x-ray in, so to speak, and then x-ray out. And that's not even to go home at night. And so you've got to go through the machines. And so if the machines are crapped up with a deadly virus, and your hands, and if you don't go right into the, in other words, it's dangerous. It's just a sheer number, you know, just the sheer numbers of people coming and going. It just makes the business. And our contractor at the time at the power plant, it's just a contractor, and they come and go. And like you've got, of course I'll throw their name out, but Bechtel has a good reputation of being a serious operator. We had Day and Zimmerman. They were actually quite serious, but some of them that don't have the, they're kind of fresh off the block. Like Peter Kiewit out of Omaha has gotten to the nuclear business.
Oh, and, that's wild. Things I never expect to hear on this radio program. I haven't heard from him in ages, but a very dear friend who worked for Peter Kiewit and Sons.
What part of the country was he in?
At the time, he was in Nebraska. Last I checked, though, he's down. Okay. He's down in Florida now. He hung his own shingle.
Yeah. Oh well, good for him. The reason I ask, that's kind of how I ended up ultimately in the union. I was working for Peter Kiewit's non-union division, Gilbert Southern, and I was working. I started out working heavy construction in Lawrenceville, Georgia. We're building an interchange of about five bridges in an area, an exit there, multiple exits. And then I became one of those people that was at work every day and they just couldn't get rid of me. And then I became a kind of a company guy, and then I became a traveler for Gilbert. And I started talking to some of the people that would come and go from management, just getting conversations with them. I didn't seek them out. And I'm like, and I said, well, can I ask somebody? They had a magazine. It was called Gilways or something. But I said, who are these people in the back of the magazine? And somebody actually said, I forget who it was. They said, oh, you don't want to bring that up. I'm like, why would I want to bring that up? I said, they look pretty happy in these pictures. Well, those were all the union people, you know, on the other projects in the country. But, you know, they're in Canada. Peter Kiewit's in Canada. They're in New York City. They're in California. I saw Peter Kiewit. When I actually marched with the writers when they went on strike back 15 years ago when I was out in California. I said, I'm going to go. It was my day off. I said, I'm going to go down there and march with those guys and gals. And I did. They said, give this guy a sign. And I was walking back and forth with them in front of the NBC studios. And they had me laugh. And I said, you guys are hilarious. And they go, well, we should be. We're comedy writers. And I go, well, you are. You are funny. You're funnier. They had me laughing.
Yeah, I know. A picket line with joy buzzers and whoopee cushions and, you know, little snake, little springs, right. Spring-loaded snakes in cans. That had to be a hoot.
Yeah, right. And real big clown shoes and stuff, red noses. And here I was driving away. I was like, man, here I am, and I'm in the heart of Southern California, you know, near Hollywood or wherever it was. I was like, there's Peter Kiewit. I'm like, shit, there they are, you know. But any case, so one of the contractors, Robin, at the power plant, I don't remember who that was, but they came out to the break room, and you've got 1,000 people in the break room. They're speaking over megaphones and stuff, and don't be scared of this virus. We don't know what. I'm like, I turned to my friend Jason. I said, Jason, they don't know what the fuck they're talking about. We don't know. Nobody knows. I said, I tell you what, we get paid when that paycheck hits Wednesday. I said, Jason, hey, I love you, bro. I said, I'm out of here. I gotta go. I'm not taking a chance. And he said a week after I left, he left. And I'm like, yeah, you were smart. And there's so many other types of work that we can constantly be involved with. I went and worked, I ended up going back to Plant Vogtle, 3 and 4. They're building, 2 new units at Vogtle, Plant Vogtle, the nuclear power plant. They're big ones. They're the same size and scope as the ones that have been built recently in China. But, any case, I've had a very exciting career. I didn't make light of the virus, and not believe, and getting back to the Marines, I served on embassy duty, and you could have been stationed at Ouagadougou, Upper Volta. You could be in Tegucigalpa, Honduras. You could be in, Beijing, China. And the shots that are required for those places vary. And the minute you say, I'm not getting that shot, they'd say, well, you're not going there. And come over here. You stand in this line, bro. I'm like,
I didn't even know I don't want to do that was a thing in the Marine Corps.
Oh, well, now I read, about the, across all branches of the service, even with Space Force, I think altogether it was about 3,000 people made official protest. I think they dropped about 1,500 people. And you have the, what I would call religious extremists, that was their argument that they thought that they could use. And matter of fact, we had one come back here to Florida, in the last few years who refused to get a shot and had been an Army Ranger and then considered himself what you call the sovereign citizen. And he gets pulled over by a sheriff or state cop. I think there's a sheriff here. And these sheriffs in Florida, they don't mess around. I mean, it's like a militarized zone. It's not a demilitarized zone. It's, everybody's got the SWAT trucks and everybody, all the cops have got rifles, it's a serious state when it comes to, it's like, New York City with good weather sometimes. But yeah, I'm just saying it could be tough, and you have to watch your attitude. And I've seen the footage on YouTube of this idiot. I'm like, dude, they don't give a shit if you're an Army Ranger. They'll shoot your ass just as quick. I don't know. People get these convoluted. Yeah, you don't have an option in the Marine Corps. But what I did find kind of interesting is in 1978, I was attending Henderson Hall, the Marine Security Guard School. It's right down the street from the Pentagon. And they have the Hilton Hotels right at the end of the cul-de-sac there, so to speak. And Arlington's literally right behind us. And they said, hey, when you go running through there, they said, you can see Robert E. Lee's house. And I said, what? And they said, yeah, check out the headstones right by the stairs. And I thought these Marines were bullshitting me. And of course, they are headstones there. And Mrs. Lee got the house back after the war, which I don't blame her, but, she's got to live somewhere. But any case, at the school, what I thought was kind of neat, and it wasn't my only experience in the Marine Corps with this, where when the Marines need people for stuff that they know is dangerous, they're not going to word it that way. They're going to say it like this. All right, we're looking for 6 names for this assignment. Out of this room, we need 6 people to volunteer for this assignment. Anybody interested, go ahead and raise your hand. All right. And they'll send a Marine over and get your name and information. And then they'll pick who they want to send. And so they asked for Beirut, Lebanon. And, I said, you know what?
Oh, Jesus.
That sounds kind of exciting. And, I thought, what the heck? And so I gave them my name and they took 2 grunts. I was a combat engineer. And actually, my NCOIC, my non-commissioned officer in charge, was a guy named Gunnery Sergeant Langlois. And Langlois was a strong guy with dark hair, and he looked like he could be Greek or Italian or something. And he had a shitload of all of our instructors were decorated Vietnam veterans, but with no attitude. These are very down-to-earth people. and the officer in charge was Colonel Copenhaver, and he was a combat veteran from the Korean and Vietnam War.
That is a very West Virginia name, by the way.
Copenhaver?
Yeah.
He could have been a West Virginian, and because I got sent to go see him, and he said, young Marine, he said, you're skating on thin ice. And he says, what seems to be the issue? And I said, well, sir, they said I didn't tell him about the Beirut part, but my NCOIC was probably the number one non-commissioned officer in charge, instructor at school. I didn't know that at the time, but I was lucky I got him. So he knew what kind of Marine I was. And he said, well, he said, what is this? You don't want to go to, Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. I said, sir, it's not that I don't want to go to Tanzania. I said, but they said I was going to, Nicosia, Cyprus. And he said, how are you doing in school? I said, I think I'm doing quite well, sir. And he said, who's your NCOIC? And I said, Gunnery Sergeant Langlois. He said, oh, Langlois, huh? And I said, sir, yes, sir. And he says, well, I'll get with him. And he said, why don't you want to go to Tanzania? And, I said, well, sir, like I said, I didn't want to spend I have already spent my money. They give you a civilian clothing allowance. I said, for a cold weather post, because all along I was going to Cyprus. I had actually gotten orders to Cyprus, but in the process, it had changed unbeknownst to myself. So I was kind of like a lot of things in life. You're the last to find out. I'm like, oh, by the way, they said, you got to go see the assignments clerk. I go in the office and I go, they go, who are you? And I said, Hankins. And they go, oh, you're going here. And I said, no, I'm not. I'm going to Cyprus. And they go, no, you're not. And they said, are you refusing these orders? And I said, I'm not refusing shit. And they said, well, we're going to get with the guy in charge of your group. And, so I thought, oh shit, I was in trouble. But the colonel said, you know, that's the best excuse I've ever heard coming through this school where you spent your money on one group and you couldn't afford another. They're not going to give you another civilian clothing allowance because you got to spend like at that time frame, $300 or $400 to buy your civilian gear because you have to stay in some post totally in civilian clothes. You don't wear a uniform. As a matter of fact, in Argentina, you did not even go to the embassy ever in uniform, which I agreed with because you were a target no matter where you were at. I never took any of that shit as a joke. I wasn't a hypochondriac about nothing. But I'm like, you want to blow me up or you want to shoot or kill me or whatever, you're going to have to catch me. And I used to run to the effing embassy. I would run to the embassy. It was 8, 9, or 10 miles to the embassy. I would stand duty and sometimes I would run back home, back to the Marine house. And after I left Argentina, I had some Marines that were casual about going back and forth to the embassy, and they were lazy, and they would ride in the van. And they just rode, and the van would be left parked in front of the Marine house, which was in a civilian neighborhood. And it had a diplomatic tag, so if a person or a group was looking for it, they'd say, oh, this is address, this is tag, must be van. So they blew the van up, and it shattered showered the front of the house, Marine house, which was a $5,000 a month home. It was a very beautiful home. It had a lot of marble in it and bidets and pools and grills. And I mean, I slept on the back of the house because I didn't want to get blown up. But I wasn't gonna say shit about it. I'm like, I'll take the room in the back. I'm cool. Don't worry about it. I'm good. And plus, I had a great view of the pool, so I didn't give a shit. And but I was gone by the time they blew that up. They didn't kill anybody, but it did send a lot of shrapnel into the front of the Marine house. But I had a lot of neat experiences. I saw a lot of neat people, and I served with a United States Aiden International. He was an Aiden International Development. He was U.S. State Department. His name was John Stallman, and his son Michael Stallman was about 13 or 14 years old, and he would come stand by the post in Honduras and watch you on duty. Now, as you're standing duty, you're looking straight ahead down a long hallway of this particular embassy. You're looking straight ahead, not like a robot, but kind of. But you're standing and facing that direction because there's cameras below you, also weapons. And there's cameras to your side as well. And there's cameras that are panning the whole complex, and there's traffic that comes and goes. There's buttons you have to push to let people indoors and through gates outside. And so it's like an air traffic controller circumstance. So it's a neat job. It's a real job. And then, So this young guy would stand there and watch us. And he was polite, and he would ask you very few questions, but he was very observative. Well, that young Michael Stallman went on to go to the Marine Preparatory School in Harlingen, Texas. And then that young graduate of that school went to the U.S. Naval Academy and became a jet fighter pilot. He got bored with jet fighter piloting and became the commanding officer for Marine Corps Recruit Depot, San Diego. If that's not moving your career along quick enough, he gets bored with that job and became a lawyer and became a JAG officer. And George Bush Jr. sent him to Iraq to investigate the Haditha murders, placed him in charge of the investigation.
Wow.
So I get my phone. Yes, I get my phone, my iPhone. In California, I had worked out at San Onofre and gone down Los Angeles or wherever I ended up going. Yeah, I was already out in San Diego, so I shot over to L.A. And I bought a phone with a friend of mine. I said, yeah, this is what I need. And so I'm scooting around on it. I come back across the country to work another project, and I'm in New York, out in the middle of nowhere, out by Oswego, New York, out in the country, and it's cold and snowy, and I'm like, I'm getting on the Internet. And I see Stallman was found shot in the back of his head.
Oh my God! I knew I recognized the name. Yes. Yeah,
that's him. That's him. So that's it. And it was an AB. It was on ABC. And his father, true story, was personal friends with John F. Kennedy, John Stallman Sr. His mother treated me like a mother that anybody would love to have. She was always endearing and very nice. And do you need anything? And why don't you come over for dinner? I'm like, why are you being so nice to me? You know, I don't want to be weak. You know what I'm saying? But I was friendly with them and very, they were very loving. And I took to the family. They were good people. So he hired the father before he passes away, wanting to find out who had murdered his son, hired Cyril Wecht, the medical examiner expert from California. I guess he is where he's from. But Cyril Wecht said, I can't tell you who did this. He said, but the shooter wasn't the son. Your son didn't kill him. So he got shot on the opposite side of his head and the back of his head with the so meant you'd have to do something, you know, backwards. It didn't make sense. And he pretty much showed you the circumstances. And then, of course, the father goes ahead and passes away. This has been a while now, but so I saw a lot of neat people. I saw the Reagan transition, and I saw how the Reagan people treated the Marines. And I was like, oh, you son of a bitches. You're all like this. All the Reagan disciples out there that came and filled the post from deputy chief of missions to your State Department, you know, all the open posts that there were. And when you come in contact with them, they treated you like a doorman. And I'm like, you can kiss my ass. I've been out there long enough. I already had an attitude, and I'm like, I ain't going to kiss your ass. And the Carter people were very kind and very considerate and very polite and very professional. And they all spoke the language no matter where they were from. I had a guy sitting next to me. He worked for the CIA. He had just come from Syria. There's a guy in his 30s sitting next to me in my Spanish class. I was 19. Now I was a pretty bright 19-year-old, and I could handle it because I was raised as a Marine by a war veteran from the Korean War. So I had had this shit in my system since I was 6-year-old, all the way, marched all the way up. I mean, it didn't faze me. I didn't realize how tough or strong I had become. I didn't know. It didn't matter. But it's like, it didn't matter. But here's a guy sitting next to me with all of that education. He had a master's degree. I talked to him. I said, why are you taking the Spanish class? He goes, well, because I've never served in Latin America, and I'm here now, so I got to learn. And it was one-on-two instruction. And so you're going to pick up the language if you care. You're going to. And my instructor, she was very good. She very, 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 she taught the State Department manual very well. She was a Honduran American, and, she would take you around the embassy and take you to the cafeteria and have you order your own lunch and kind of get you out of that shell. And that just worked wonders for me. Not my personality, but just, getting over yourself, engaging your self-awareness and not getting hung up on yourself and what you think people think of you. It was a part of a growing up thing. And so, but good God, as you know, Robin, the poorest of the poorest people were the kindest to me, and they were so, so compassionate and so caring and kind. I mean, I, I, it, it changed a friend of mine from Birmingham so much. He's never adjusted. He came from a family of privilege from Birmingham. His father was insurance executive and had been an Army officer. Mike was a corporal of the Marine Corps, not doing well. His brother was an international law lawyer. And I said, oh, yeah, I'm sure he is, Mike. He goes, you don't think so, Mark? He goes, 2 weeks. I go, oh, sure, Mike. We were best friends. The doorbell rings. He goes, Mark, my brother's here. And I'm like, holy shit, you are an international law lawyer. But Mike was so taken back by the pop that it changed him as a person. He could never. And I've remained with Mike. I haven't talked to him real recently, but I have seen him in my time after the Marine Corps. That he could never adjust back. And maybe I can't either. But I didn't plan on adjusting back. I kind of think I'm still the same person, but. It changed him because it just is stuff that you don't see, and experience and have to care about people or you may not make it through a particular neighborhood. That's life in the fast lane. But, any case, I had a wonderful tour of duty and got to see a lot, got to see, all branches of the government. And I saw the difference between a Reagan Republican and a Carter Democrat. I said, God, I'm glad I voted for President Carter. What a good humanitarian.
What a decent human being.
That's all I've got, Bob. My God.
You caught it. It's okay.
Yeah.
I don't hear that very often. That's okay. I don't hear it very often anymore. You're fine. You're fine.
I'm sorry, Robin.
No, Mark, don't. Please don't.
I
accidentally misgendered myself the other day, so,
Cut yourself. Cut yourself a break, right?
Right. There's a lot of grace that goes with this.
Right. Right. I think it's good. It's good for us. I think it's good for us to accept change and accept truth. It's not change. It's just the truth. Who we are. So.
Oh, and by the way, while we were talking. I got a note from Scary. Yeah. I got a note from Scary Jerry.
Yeah.
The subject line is "Saying drag on Duval Cinco de Mayo." Duval was great. Key West forever. And it's a selfie with Scary Jerry and an absolutely lovely drag queen. She's beautiful.
Oh well, they. I don't know what time of year it is. It might be. Is it New Year's? They have one lady comes down in a giant shoe or something, but in the Keys. And of course, the Keys has always had a good reputation. I think that a lot of trans people know, and some don't give a shit. I mean, as far as they're not intimidated, but they realize that they've been singled out and targeted. And I'm arguing with my high school friend who's the probably millionaire. He's Opus Dei. I'm like, do you realize you're supporting fascism, man? That's why I'm like, I don't care. He says, oh, we just read the what's the thing they give him on the weekend to read. I'm like, hey, get out of here. I've already warned you about these idiots. And then I sent him the photograph of the guy with the SS on it. I'm like, these are your people, man. This isn't Antifa. This is your people. I said, I could go get with Antifa, and I have. I marched with Antifa in Miami. And I stopped some Antifa kids from doing some shit, not because I was a bully, but it's like, not yet. We'll get them over here. I just kind of slowed down some violence against cops, but the cops were bringing it on themselves. But any case, so I'm proud. I marched with the kids down there with the all black, and they had the head and the face gear. They were smart. They did the rolling resistance. They were well trained, and then. They didn't know what to make. I wore a Che Guevara shirt. I made a Che Guevara shirt with Che on the front, Che on the back, and a big hard hat with an American flag. So I don't give a shit what anybody thinks. That's how I feel about it, bro.
Yeah.
So bring it up.
Fuck them. Yeah. Fuck them. Feed them fish heads, Mark.
Well, the free trade agreement wanted to put their permanent headquarters there in Miami, and it sure didn't happen. And people paid. There was a price to pay for that. There was violence brought by the police. But, I got lucky. I didn't, I didn't get hurt too bad, but I, I've had an exciting existence, and I still am prepared to defend myself. I don't look for trouble, but there's a lot of people that are, I watch in traffic, Robin. Here was something I was going to say earlier in our conversation. I don't wear flip-flops anymore. I have some nice Teva Chacos, you know, they're expensive sandals. I don't wear them. I just wear my sneakers, or I have a pair of real quick Italian-made leather slip-on boots. But I just wear those because of the circumstances. It's just, you know, I do that for my own safety. It's not, I'm not paranoid, but it's like, why, if you have to run towards something or away from something, and you're in flip-flops, you've made a mistake. And this is the environment. I'm not paranoid, but I am trained, and I'm protected at all times. Better trained than folks that think they're trained, whichever. I'm not making it a challenge, but I'm just saying I spend a lot of time. That's all you do on embassy duty is shoot and run.
And
run if you have to, but especially if you run out of ammo. But I put down a gun in 1990 and picked one back up in 2021 for my own granddaughter's sake, taking her to school and back and forth. And I said, if they take over the streets of this city, the Oath Keepers, if they stand out in traffic and they try to stop me and there's a confrontation, they will definitely be surprised, because what you're psychologically and physiologically trained to do as a Marine, if you're experienced at what you've
it's supposed to be automatic, isn't it?
Yeah, I would just have to be mean as shit, and I would leave the circumstance with both people's rifles, and they'd be asleep on the ground, and I'd probably take their ammo. But unfortunately,
that's a hell of a thing to have to ponder, Mark. It really is.
Well, it's a reality, and it is an atrocious thing to think in a country such as ours that. But if people jump out in the street and think that they're going to be sympathetic to something that is way far from being honest, I'm not going to drive away from them. I'm just saying.
I understand. By the way, Mark, you got a note from Jude. She said, Mark remains enfolded in my quiet meditations for his words that may have saved a grandson who was holding a gun for someone. You can never outdraw a drawn weapon. He returned that gun the next day. Peace, Jude.
And I appreciate Jude mentioning that, and I thank you, Jude, for believing in that. It's one of the first things they teach you at an academy when it comes to the gun portion of it all. And they break out the plastic guns while you're wearing your sweatshirts in the gymnasium on the padded mats, and then they break out the plastic knives. Well, they bring instructors that have combat experience and on the streets as well, and that's one of the first things they make sure the whole academy class understands. And they also show you how quickly you could be stabbed at a distance. But so it's a very quick subject. Most shootings are 3 to 5 to 7 feet. And like I said, I don't right now, I think I don't trust the circumstances. I think we might be making a little progress. I think the sedition convictions are helpful, but I still don't trust until we recapture the White House in 2024. I'll not wear flip flops for a while. That's all I can say.
I get it. I really do. Mark, I thank you for this conversation.
Thank you for listening to me, Robin.
We don't hear from you very often, but by Jove, when you do call, you bring your A game. You really, really do. And I appreciate it. And I thank you.
Well, it's a gift to be able to speak with somebody who's as civilized as you are, Robin. And, you've educated me. And I share your wisdom, and I share your, station with people. And I've actually put it up in the break room inside of nuclear power plants, but, that's all I can do. You know, I care about you, and I care about your family and your friends, and I prefer peace. How we get there, I don't know, but that's all I can say.
I understand. Well, Mark, have a great evening. And by the way, thanks for saving us from a goose egg. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome, sister.
Much appreciation, and have a great evening. And look forward to hearing from you again, okay?
Okay, Robin. You have a nice week, and I'll continue to listen to you. Thank you for being there for us.
Thanks, Mark. Bye. That's our buddy Mark down in Florida. And I'm not kidding. Yeah. You know, The conversations that take place here never cease to amaze me. I've just run a half hour overtime because I didn't want to cut Mark off. Mark had things to say that were valuable and meaningful, as is almost always the case here, unless we're being just absolutely frivolous and silly, and even that has its value. So there is still a $50 matching challenge on the table, courtesy of Darlene in Connecticut. Thank you so much for that, Darlene, and hopefully it will get met. I'm not kidding when I say that, you know, lately it's one existential crisis after another around here. And it wears me the hell down. It really, really does. And that's not complaining. It's just a fact. So the 11th, we go dark here if I don't meet the extortionate demands of Appalachian power. It's exhausting. Anyway, the fundraising goal at present stands at 883 tomorrow, unless the overnight crew steps in with some miraculous conduct, help, kindness, generosity. Thank you. Cross our fingers and toes. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to our PayPal and Patreon subscribers. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Darlene. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging with this little program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks this evening to Sparky. Didn't see if Steve made it in, but if you did, soup. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, like and subscribe, leave a comment, and tell your friends and neighbors what's going on here. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please stay safe. Get your booster. Wear your mask when you're around the maggots. They are a disease blot. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Take it with you everywhere you go, pocket or purse. I've got mine. Keep some in the car, too. I tell you what, one that I really liked, I found a Suave hand sanitizer spray. So it's just, you know, basically it's just alcohol in a pump spray bottle. Stuff's really, I like it. Maintain your social distance. You can let up a little bit, like Paul from Parts Unknown said. And of course, if... some lawyer comes babbling down the road at you saying, I couldn't call no witnesses to disprove the negative. Avoid that maggot pettifogger like the plague, because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.